call from mom. Answer it. Call silence.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thank you, gentlemen and guns coming.
Hey guys, brand new podcast. And it's a great one. I always say it's a great one. This is really great. It's obviously it's Natasha and Moshe. If you don't know who they are, then I will talk to them about them in 2 seconds towards the end of this podcast. But let's get in touch with each other. The Kreischer family is going hard in the paint with family love. Am I right, Leanne?
We are.
We are doing everything together. It's been a blast. We were in Hawaii. We were in San Fran. We were in
Sacramento.
Palm Springs, and then we went to Splash City.
Soak
City. It was really fucking great.
It was awesome.
It's been really great.
Yes, it has.
I'm really looking forward to Leanne's podcast coming out. I know I've been promoting it a lot, and when it comes out, trust me, I will share that with you. And Leanne's really excited, and she went to a big party the other night, and all the women involved that have been a part of it have really excited, and I think it's really cool. I'm really proud of her.
Thanks, babe.
I'm saying that because we have a husband and wife couple on the podcast today, and the whole time I was thinking, this is not our relationship in the slightest. It would be interesting. I think probably more interesting for me to be married to Moshe, only because he's such a fascinating fucking guy.
Yeah.
He really is. He's so smart, and he is liberal, and he's liberal in, like, the most truest sense of the word of, like, love. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying conservatives are against love, but, like, he really is an empathetic guy, and he's a comic, so we see things from both sides. And Natasha literally just chimes in and says the funniest fucking thing ever. Man, me and her could not be more different human beings.
Really?
You'll hear that in the podcast. Oh. It is funny. Like, I tell her about getting weird when I come into the man cave and just get weird.
She didn't get weird?
No, the best is in the middle of the podcast. Moshe's like, hey, I need to go to the bathroom. Can we stop down? And I go, no, just piss in the yard. And her eyes lit up. She's like, excuse me? I was like, yeah, this is a bro's house. You piss in the yard. And Moshe lit up like, I get to piss in the yard?
And she was
like, what does your wife say? I go, she fucking married me. You kidding me? This weekend, Orlando at the Orlando Improv on the 22nd, 23rd, 24th. Then New York City for the Skanks Fest. On the 26th, fuck it, I'm going to reveal it, everybody. I'm doing Desus and Mero. I'm so fucking excited. This is a show that is so bingeable online. I've watched it. I've watched a TV show, of course, but man, I get stuck on these guys. They are so fucking funny. You should check out the one with LeBron flaming that kid on the just dunking on some fucking dude. They're fucking hilarious. Check them out. Go on their YouTube channel, subscribe, and just start binge watching them. And then wait for me. By the way, spoiler alert, Adam Richman did one of my favorite Hot Wings shows. It's coming out soon.
Nice.
Adam Richman, Man vs. Food. Shout out to Adam Richman. Shout out to Desus and Mero. Omaha on the 30th. I am going to be there. Omaha for a Call and Sick to Work show. It is sold out. If you wanted to get tickets, call the club day of and see if there's any no shows. Ask if it makes sense for you to show up if there's a no show, and if not, just stay and party with us at the bar. We're doing Todd and Tyler. This is all Leanne hears right now is great. After he comes back from Oklahoma at the casino, he's going to be a fucking mess. We've got the Oklahoma. I think it's a Calusa Casino on the 1st of July. Is that correct, Calusa? Is it Calusa?
Yes.
Columbus, Ohio, the 7th, 8th of July. Pittsburgh, these make Leanne angry, 20th, 21st, 22nd of July. Followed by Cleveland at Hilarities, 27th, 28th, 29th of July. August, we've got Houston, Brea, Phoenix in the last 3 weeks of August. Then my big Australian tour, starting with Singapore on the 9th, Perth on the 11th of September. Sydney on the 13th, Melbourne on the 14th, Sydney on the 16th, Brisbane on the 18th. Australian mates. I don't know if that sounded, it didn't sound probably right.
Didn't sound Australian.
It didn't sound Australian.
No.
Hey, dear fellow comedy podcast lovers, listeners to this on Australia, please, please, please spread the word. I'd like to sell these tickets. I know that it's tracking well, but I want to sell it out. By the way, my buddy Tommy Buns is going to be there in August, so make sure to check out his dates there in August. See both of us. We're both very funny and very different comics. Tacoma, Edmonton, Chicago, D.C. is the last week of September. Impractical Jokers Cruise, my birthday week, first week of November. That's all you need to know about us. Real quick, I'm going to read off to you Natasha and Moshe's dates. They are doing a tour. It's called the Endless Honeymoon Tour. It starts July 19th. That's Isla's birthday.
Very good. Day after.
In New Orleans. 22nd in Atlanta. 23rd in Miami. 28th in Montreal. 29th in Boston. The 2nd in Brooklyn. The 3rd in Philly. They're doing the troc. That'll be sold out. Get your tickets now. 5th in Milwaukee. 6th in Chicago. The 8th, August 8th in Minneapolis at the Woman's Club. Go to NatashaLegero.com. Or MosheKasher.com. I think that's Moshe's. I don't know. Listen, it is very special when the listeners of this podcast happen to run advertising firms at companies I'm in need of. I said out loud on this podcast, I don't know if you heard this, but I said something about my back and about my bed and how I hate the fuck that I always dig lumps into my bed, that we got these expensive fucking beds, like through the roof expensive beds. We went through three of them.
Not a bed, a mattress.
Mattress, I'm sorry, mattress.
Mattress.
And after 6 months of sleeping in it, there was a body mark in it. And then they became uncomfortable because you have the Great Wall of China dividing me and my wife, which would be fine if it was 4 feet high and she didn't hear me snore. But the truth is, it's just high enough to screw up my fucking shoulders so that if I lay on my right side, my arm is jetted up like I'm heiling Hitler. And if I lay on my left side, it's over my eyes like I'm dabbing. So they drive. You know what? You don't know what a dab is?
No, I don't know what a dab is.
It's when the kids do this.
A little dab will do you?
No, it's.
You don't know
what a dab is?
I know. Yeah, I know what a dab is to me.
No, I know what a little dab will do you is.
Oh, do you?
Anyway.
That's from Dippity Doo. You know.
I literally said, can I get a mattress sponsor? I said it out loud in the podcast. Mm-hmm. The next day, we got a call from Casper Mattresses. And I was extremely nervous because initially getting rid of your mattress is a really big deal. Because you're like, you know, I'm afraid. It's almost like getting out into a new relationship. Because you're like, I know what I'm in right now. I know it hurts, but I've had good nights. Maybe I just need a feather bed. Maybe I just need to put a piece of wood under this. Maybe I need to doctor this up.
Well, the thing is, too, you kind of like to test drive a mattress. So
that's the scary part. And by the way, the mattresses we bought, three of them, in the past two places we've lived, we bought one in our old house. We bought a new one for the house when we got here, and then we bought a new one again in this house. Each mattress was over $3,000.
Yeah.
Now, that may sound like a lot because I thought to myself, hell, I'd spend $20,000 for a good night's sleep. I spend 8 hours a night in this bed. It should be fantastic. And then they sent a box. It showed up in a box. Dude, UPS guy drops it off.
Yeah,
a
it
mattress.
Was awesome.
And I got nervous. Oh, shit, man. There's no way a boxed mattress is going to be Burt Kreischer's fancy. And then I checked the price tag of what they sent us. I was like, okay. Secondly, this is affordable. I got so nervous about the fact that it was affordable and it arrived in a box, and Leanne was so excited. No, I heard these are fantastic mattresses.
Because they're memory foam.
Yeah.
And memory foam is amazing.
Memory foam is has Alzheimer's when it comes to leaving body dents in it, like these other mattresses that we've been getting. That's a bad joke, but
it is sort of a reach, but
so,
okay.
So our gardener comes over, sees that we have a Casper's mattress and lights up, asks what we're doing with our old mattress, and I tell him it's broken. There's two body dents in it. He says, literally, if you take it in the alley and leave it in the alley, it'll be gone before I'm done mowing your lawn because people want mattresses. And that's an expensive one. It looks expensive. Drop it out. Put the Casper on. We lay on it both initially, and I was like, okay, there's got to be a catch to this. I just was scared. Fucking love this mattress.
It's a great mattress.
The girls jump in our bed every fucking morning. Go on my Instagram. You'll see the pictures. This mattress is the most comfortable mattress in our house.
It's really great.
It is fantastic. I slept last night unassisted, by the way. No booze or drugs or alcohol or whatever. And I had the greatest night's sleep of my life.
Yeah, memory foam mattresses are typically extremely expensive as well. And this is very affordable mattress. And I screwed up. When I ordered the mattress, I ordered a king size mattress. But we have a California king. And all I had to do was let Casper Mattress know. And they exchanged the mattress for free. Because all returns are free in the U.S. and Canada with Casper. So if you don't like it, you can sleep on it for, I think they have like a 100-day test drive kind of thing. And if you don't like it, then you can return it for free. I mean, it's kind of risk-free.
I love it. I really love this mattress. I will stand behind this the same way I do the other products that you know that I rant and rave about. I'm not going to say other products in the middle of this beautiful Casper read.
No,
but man, you know the products I like and you know the products I support. And trust me, I am behind Casper mattresses.
Well, the thing is, we really actually use the stuff that we talk about. We actually are sleeping on this mattress every single day.
Burtcast for life.
So great.
Burtcast branded is my new shirt.
Nice.
Yeah, if you rock our gear, you get a free Burtcast branded.
Oh, good.
You send me a tweet.
One more shirt I got to make.
Awesome.
You could buy one of our t-shirts on our website if you like.
Burtcast is supported by Casper, offering an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. And when I say shockingly, you're talking to a guy who's overpaid for mattresses nonstop. I'm telling you, if ever I get done with this Casper mattress, I'm simply just going to buy a new one the way I do my running shoes. I'll buy the same one.
But I mean, I've had a memory foam pillow for 25 years. The same memory foam pillow. But my point is, I don't know that memory foam wears out.
No, I'm saying if a dog pisses on it or if I piss on it.
If a dog pisses on it, we're going to have big problems.
With over 20,000 reviews on Casper, Amazon, and Google, and an average of 4.8 stars, it is quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. Casper mattresses combine supportive memory foam to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. And we've tested that bounce out.
We have?
Free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. Did you hear that? Free shippings and return to the U.S. and Canada. Try sleeping on a Casper for 100 nights risk-free. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund everything. Mattresses are designed and developed and assembled in the USA. Special offer for you, our BurtCast listeners, right now. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/BurtCast and using the promo code BurtCast. That's BERTCAST. Terms and conditions apply. I'm serious, guys. I love this fucking mattress. I'm really happy with it.
I love it too.
Yeah. So use that code BurtCast at casper.com/BurtCast and get $50 off. And if you don't like it in 100 days, don't call me. Call Casper. They'll pick it up for free. All right. Let's start rocking. By the way, we do have those giving out spanking shirts, the tank tops. I will be selling them at shows exclusively unless Leanne changes her mind on wanting to ship them. No words?
Well, I have to get them on the website first. That's the challenge. It's not the shipping. It's the getting it on the website.
So if you want, come to one of my live dates. They've been selling out first before any shirts because they're fantastic tank tops. The smalls go quickest. So I think there's going to be a lot of chicks posting pictures and giving out Spankin's tank tops. For those of you who don't know the band I was in college, I kicked out the guitarist. He formed the band Creed. The name of our initial band was Giving Out Spankin's.
Wouldn't it be funny if like a preschool teacher just wore that shirt?
Yeah, probably she gets sued.
You think so?
Oh, fun. Today's culture? All right. Let's start this podcast. And by the way, that's a fitting conversation topic because we do talk about social justice warriors. We talk about Evergreen College. We talk about comedy a lot. And this is a good one. You guys are going to absolutely love this. Is there anything I forgot to mention except for Laughable? Go to Laughable. Try the app. Laughable app. Go to the app store. Download it. It's the best way to listen to podcasts. It really is because today you can listen to Natasha and Moshe, and you can go to Moshe, and you would find very quickly that Moshe was on Joe Rogan, and that is a fantastic fucking podcast. You can find all the podcasts they've been on, and you can follow them, and then follow all the podcasts that they are going to be on, their own podcasts, and I think shortly, if not, Ned, correct me if I'm wrong, everyone hit up Ned at Laughable and let him know what's going on. I think soon you're going to be able to buy tickets to these guys on Laughable. And that's when it's going to fucking be fucking amazing, because you'll hear someone like this Natasha and Moshe on here and go, shit, I want to go see their tour. And then just click their link, click their tickets, bam. Can you do that yet? Let's see if you can do that yet, Ned. I'm gonna go on your thing right now, Ned's like, dude, you should have waited. This is why I should have talked to you on the phone on Thursday. I'm very sorry, Ned, to be dead honest with you. My life's gotten away from me a little bit this last week.
Who's Ned?
Ned, he owns Laughable. He's our buddy.
Got it.
Yeah. Why can't I get that my phone's not working? Here we go.
Maybe you should just wrap up this
week. Fuck. I got the Laughable beta one. It's the one only Ned gave us. Go to Laughable, download it, check out the podcasts. It's a great way to download podcasts. Keep them on your phone. All right, that's it. Are you ready?
Ready.
Let's start the BurtCast. Ladies and gentlemen, Natasha Leggero and Moshe Kasher.
This is BurtCast.
They won't like the dog. That'll bother them. And that's like a bad way to start it off. Here, grab that mic right
Who's
next to you.
Up there?
That's my wife. Yeah, back then she was.
Wait, are we going?
Yeah.
Did you get rid of the one that says...
No, of course I didn't.
Where is it?
Which one?
Oh, there, okay, yeah.
Yeah. You're talking... Let me...
Yeah.
Everyone talk in their things.
Hi, it's Moshe.
Hello, it's Natasha.
Natasha, what a great name.
Yeah.
Natasha,
yeah.
Did I hear you on a podcast? First of all, I have to say congratulations.
Did we start?
Yeah, we just started. Top four funniest women in comedy right
top
now?
Four.
Top four.
No.
You
just saw, you mean you saw that L thing that just had me and Eliza and Christella and Tiffany Haddish on it?
Yeah. That was
not top four women in comedy, but that's
four,
hilarious.
This is top four women doing it. Listen.
This
no,
is
a top
are four. The top four women with publicists who got on the cover of that.
Listen, let me tell you
article.
Something. There are a slew, a gang of bitches who are hating that article right now.
Really?
Of course.
Wait, I think you misread it. It's not top four women in comedy.
No, I did what everyone's going to do, and that is Eliza comes out and says, I'm the funniest bitch out there, and then all of a sudden, she's next to, inarguably, I'll say, one of the most up-and-coming movie stars right now in Tiffany Haddish. Tiffany Haddish is... legit turning into a movie star. Legit.
Okay.
Easily one of the funniest women that I will say in the business, and that's you. Oh, by the way, a trailblazer. And then a young Latino comic who's
in Cars 3.
But she's also had like her own sitcom a number
she's
of times.
She's in movies too, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I didn't know she was in movies. But Tiffany's like legit movies, but... And then people are going to be
Cars 3 isn't legit?
No, yeah, you'd be in Cars 3 in a fucking heartbeat.
I mean, I would have done Cars 2, but to be honest, I would have turned down Cars 3.
I still have a problem with Christella, only because one time I told her, can you do 25 minutes? I have to take a shit. She did 15 minutes, and I had to go on stage having not wiped my ass. And I'll never forget that. No
Wait,
shit.
Really?
I had to do an hour.
Wait, hold on.
I had to do an hour.
Hold on, so you're
it
in
It takes you 25 minutes to take a shit?
That's a great question, Natasha.
Oh, you so belong on the cover of that magazine.
Now, first of all, it was not the cover of the magazine. Wait,
now,
who do
you know?
That
Bert, by the way, Bert last year in L got top four longest shitters in comedy.
Yep.
Yeah. Wait, Bert, though, who do you know who's mad about that article?
No, they're not mad about that article. They're mad that Eliza came out and said what she said last week or whatever, right? I mean, we can all talk. We can be honest. You don't have to comment. I'll comment.
All
Eliza
right.
said what she said last week about.
Yeah, she did.
About
she said that.
Yeah, and she was in Mexico. That fucking ruins a vacation, in my opinion. That's all I could see was that the whole time you're like, fuck, I got to check my Twitter feed. I can't enjoy
this. She didn't seem to care.
She, of course she cared.
Of course she cared, but it didn't seem to ruin her. She didn't back down.
She didn't back down, but she definitely cared. I was in Hawaii 4 years ago. 4 years ago, and... Tracy Morgan's doing Ask Me Anything, and someone says, so what's it like smoking PCP with Bert Kreischer? And he said, first of all, I don't know the man. That never happened. I wish he'd stop telling the story. Ruined my trip. Like, because I,
oh,
then
because
I go,
people were accusing you of lying.
Lying, and then I'm like, it's true. And then I call Tony Woods. Tony's like, I'm in fucking New Zealand. What the fuck are you calling me for? Right. And I'm like, I'm in Hawaii. I'm fucking spinning out
you
of control.
You just called whatever black guy you had in your phone. Like,
no, Tony Woods was there that night.
Can you help me?
Tony Woods was there that night, and I'm like, Tony, I need you to back me up on Twitter. He's like, Shawty, I'll do whatever you want. But but when you put out, when you get, man, I do not look at my phone on vacation. I learned that lesson after that. I do not look at my phone because one person says something negative to you or someone says something negative in a podcast about you and it spins you out of control. And I love you, Eliza. You know that. But I will say that Eliza's normal just like all of us. And she saw that and she saw girls going hard in the fucking paint at her.
Yeah, they were. They're going hard in the pussy juice.
You do not have to comment on this because I understand that this may be really close to everything in your career because you are – you. She is, we'll say this, one of the – top people in the game of comedy, despite your sex.
Me or Eliza?
You. Oh. You. 100%. You were like, how? I'm not going to, I don't, but I won't justify it, but so you don't say much, but I will say that that article then came out the next week, and Eliza must have been like, read that, bitches.
I mean, 100%.
And then you've heard people be mad about it.
No, I haven't actually. No, I just only about Eliza.
Oh, you? Oh, yeah. I see. So yeah. You were. So people aren't like angry about this L thing that our publicist all got us.
No, I don't think so.
It is very good timing, though. Very funny timing.
It's amazing.
Women in comedy issue. I mean, it's just very funny.
And Eliza's like, by the way, I'm one of the only five chicks in the business doing it right. And then, oh, by the way, these are the other three.
She should have put that in the interview,
I'll be real. Once again, I do not want to put you in an uncomfortable situation to be on my podcast. You can say whatever the fuck you want. Moshe, I know you, I don't want to ask you to be – you know she was talking about Amy, really.
No, I don't think there's any proof of that.
100% she was talking about Amy Schumer.
Really?
100% Yes. Oh, God, yes. That's what she was – and so like
no, – first of all – she said she walks into the improv on any given day. Amy Schumer's not up at the improv.
Oh, by the way, okay. Well, she canticoded the phrase. What she was because Eliza doesn't walk into the improv and watch any woman set at all. She's saying
well,
technically
she's waiting for her part.
She's you know they don't book chicks back to back. That's not true. Listen, I guarantee you, she's like I watched your Netflix special, bitch. I didn't like it. Watch mine. Tell me I'm not the fucking master. That's what I think that was coming out of.
Interesting.
Yeah, I read into it, but everyone's going to read into it.
Well, I didn't understand what pussy jokes she was talking about exactly.
Also, what's wrong with a pussy joke? That's the absurd part. Is like, and I think the thing that people took umbrage with. I mean, I'm not thrilled that we're talking about this, but I think the thing that people took umbrage with was there's a lot of layers to the statement. A lot of amazing layers. First of all, World War II, not a deep cut. Every comedian in comedy has a World War II joke. The most famous war of all time.
By the way,
the World War.
So I'm going to stop, put a pin in this. The one thing I said to my wife, we're walking the dog, and I said I so badly want to talk about their projects they're working on, but I don't want to ever fuck it, because I really do like everything that you guys create, make. I'm really envious in a positive, inspirational way that you guys seem to forge your own path with your own voice in this business. But she's like, what do you want to talk? And I go, I kind of wish, Moshe's the kind of guy that I... Like, what's it like to be married to a comic? Do you guys get to pick apart life together? Because my wife, I can't talk to her about the Eliza show. I can't talk to her about anything that's going on in my business that I'm passionate about and I love. My wife's just like, I don't give a fuck.
Well, we're very passionate about Eliza. As a couple.
Well, we have what's called...
We've been talking about her for a long time.
Right, we have a marriage and a family that's sort of... based in Eliza, you know, in the way that many people have family based in Christ, ours has always been and always will be truly based in confirmed kills. And war paint. I mean, those are sort of the two, the Old Testament and New Testament of our relationship.
Wait, yeah. So you're saying you're jealous because we can talk about comedy together.
Like just when he said that, first of all, a World War II, like I read that, I didn't, I was like, all I read was, I don't know anything about World War II. I don't have that in my act, definitely. And so I was like, okay, I'm probably one of those pussy joke comics, but on the male side, you know?
Well, I will say, I have love for Eliza.
I love Eliza. I don't hate her at all.
And I think she's a good comic and a strong comic. And I just think that, like, what that statement was, in my opinion, it pulled a string that has been pulled by male comedians and male pundits and Christopher Hitchens and Jerry Lewis and for like 40 fucking years, the trope of like women aren't funny.
Which we all know and have proven isn't true.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Same percentage.
It's saying women aren't artists. It doesn't make sense.
I think that her pulling that string, even though she is a
self-identified. But she didn't say women aren't funny.
No, but it was a. What I'm saying is it was a metaphorical string. It was like an alarm bell that female comics have heard for the past 40 years since they started the Belly Room and were like, all the girls go there. And Sandra Bernhardt said, go fuck yourself. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that Eliza knew that she was pulling that string, but she was. And so there's this state, there's this idea in social justice warrior circles that like you, and I'm not sure I believe it, but it's an interesting idea, which is that you're not responsible for your intent does not equal impact. Does that make sense? Like,
it does
what
make
you
sense.
Mean when you mean I want to empower these women, and you mean I'm saying this so that I think women can, I don't know what exactly the statement was supposed to mean. It doesn't matter, because what really matters is what people experience when they hear it. So I think that's what went wrong.
It's the same thing with, like, people say stuff about trigger warnings and they go, trigger warnings are ridiculous. And there is a part of me that goes, yeah, but there is shit that people could say out loud that would definitely fuck my day up. Like, I don't like hearing about balloons or clowns. And just don't bring it up.
100%. It fucks your day up if someone talks about a balloon?
No, but it doesn't fuck my day up. But, like, if Isla has a balloon in the car, like, this, we came back from San Francisco, she got a balloon at her culmination ceremony, and she kept it with her, and I found out it was in the car, and I was in the car like, fuck. Like, it makes me really uncomfortable. I don't like balloons. I really don't like balloons. So like, I know I'm trivializing this, but
in your world,
it's why I don't tell rape jokes, really, because I go,
yeah, in your world, clowns and balloons are, that's your rape.
That's your rape. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think there's an exact number of male comedians that any male comic could go, look, I go into the comedy clubs and all I see are dick jokes and fucking loud talking and pussy this and, you know, and black people this and, you know. And it's the identical same portion, you know. And by the way, which is so funny, is like I hung out with Attell, and he was like, "I don't like these fucking storytellers." Uh-huh. By the way, that's all I am. I've really just turned into just telling stories now. But I didn't take that as an insult to me. I was like, clearly he hasn't seen my act in a while. Uh-huh. You should watch it now. It's gotten better. He goes, no punchlines, just a bunch of emphasis and faces. And I was like, okay, that sounds a lot closer to my act now. All right.
Emphasis, faces. That's funny.
Yeah, I was like, wait, please don't say takes his shirt off. Please don't say takes his shirt off. But
I don't like these machines.
Yeah, I did my last hour special with my shirt off.
Oh, cool.
This is what I think we do ourselves. Everyone in comedy does themselves a disservice when they try to suss out what's good and what isn't in comedy. I've always hated that, and this has always been true for me. And because I came up both in the club scene and the alt scene, I've been, you know, sort of privy to both sides' interpretation of what isn't comedy, right? So when I'm at the Comedy Store, I get to hear all about what isn't comedy in the alt comedy world. When I'm in the East Side doing a bar show, I get to hear, like, their thing is, you know, is the Comedy Store. I always hear, like, oh, the Comedy Store sucks. Like, oh, cool. When's the last time you were there?
Yeah.
I've never really been there. I just hear this sort of idea that it's like a racist. It's the whole thing is bullshit, right? It's like, why does anybody need to figure out what comedy is or isn't? All you got to do is sit down and watch. Are you laughing? And does it feel good?
Yeah.
That's it.
I said this to I was talking to Ari in Tripoli the other day, and you know, I'm very new to this store. Like within the last year, I think I started working there, and I'd always wanted to. I thought that is really where my home was. I never felt that the improv was never really where I belonged. I've never felt comfortable at the Laugh Factory ever once. I was like, oh, that'll be my home. And then I got there and I felt very, very comfortable immediately. So many things were right up my alley. And then I started like going there enough where I started realizing, you know, lazy habits in comics or bad habits in comics that I once would be like, oh, I love this, you know? And then I started going, oh, my job isn't to try to call them out. My job is to recognize that in them and then avoid those in my act. And then take the guys I really respect and go, how do I get more like that? Like, how do I find... Like, a perfect example is, like, Attell. I just realized that he has no fat on his act. Like, there's no fucking fat.
No filler. No filler.
No filler?
Or was he trying to say all killer, no filler?
Well, because fat seemed like a good thing for a second, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
like,
trigger warning. Sorry, guys.
Okay.
There's a bunch of fat
balloons.
Yeah.
Like a fat balloon dick, right? Yeah.
But, like, and so I think that's the way I look at it. And I think you were probably around. I never really hung out in the alt rooms at all. mostly because I was the thing they hated. I definitely, by the way, at the time I was doing it, when the alt scene was big and blowing up, I was exactly what they disliked in comedy.
Which is what?
Just loud dick joke. You know, cops hate when you touch your faces. Ah, do this. Why? You know, like it's a getting out of a ticket joke. It's all the... I've pretty embarrassed of my last hour. Not the one I just did, but the one before that.
You're supposed to be embarrassed of your two hours ago.
Yeah, exactly.
But I just feel like I could paint a picture of the lousy version of an alt comedian.
Okay.
It's so easy. It's exactly. A guy in a plaid shirt with a notebook out.
Who just has references.
References, barely saying anything, telling a meandering story, like a 5-minute story that you're like, oh, that was one joke. Oh, yeah. I see. If you took all the fat out, you would have one 30-second a tell joke that wasn't as good. And I could paint an equally compelling picture of the lousy version of a club comedian. You know, that's like, ladies, you know, anybody says ladies, you're out. But you know what I'm saying? It just doesn't... And it's all just like bullshit because it's who's good. Is Patton a bad comedian? Is Brent Weinbach a bad? Obviously not. Is like, you know, the clubbiest of club comedians that's killing. I mean, you know, Attell, you know.
Attell defines himself as a club comic.
Yeah. So is Attell. None of it makes any sense. Attell's obviously a brilliant genius operating at the top of his game. So is Maria Bamford, right?
Yeah.
Louis C.K. is obviously a filthy, disgusting, like, blue pig. And Jerry Seinfeld is obviously a squeaky, clean, like, master of the craft. Is anyone better in this of the four people I just met? No, they're all just comedians that are operating at the top of their game. And when we get to this, my opinion is, when we get to this area where you're trying to suss out what's good and what isn't, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love to gossip. I talk shit all day.
I love gossiping.
I mean, it's the best, right?
I remember doing podcasts when that was what they were. And that's
before people were listening.
Good. And then I remember when they were listening and fucking watching my life just... Just everyone's like, dude, what the fuck did you say about me? I was like, I said it in a podcast. I didn't know you listened to Jason Nash's podcast.
Well, I don't know if you feel the same. I feel like really strongly about the fact that when I started comedy, which is probably how long have you been doing comedy?
18 years. I started when I was 26 years old. I'm 44, so 18 years.
18. We've been doing.
We started in 2002.
Yeah, about 15 years. We've been doing it about 15 years, a similar amount of time.
I feel most people, there was like a group of people who all started in 2002.
Totally. I'd be curious to find out what the cultural zeitgeist was that inspired people to get into comedy.
Well, I will tell you this.
Mine was very personal.
As a dude that...
Yours was very personal?
Yeah, like it wasn't... I didn't know anyone or didn't know there was a scene. I just was like, oh, I'm from New York and I saw someone do it and I was like, oh, maybe that's a way to express myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, did you want to get into acting before comedy or comedy before acting?
Acting.
Acting first. And then you were like, oh, I feel like I'm empty here. I need a space to feel full.
Well, tell the full story.
I need a place to feel full.
Well, I think that some actors find comedy that way. For me, I was the guy that everyone was like, oh, you're the funniest guy I've ever met in my life. You should do comedy. I was the guy at the party doing the sprinkler dance. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I really was.
So people told you your whole life you should do comedy.
Yeah but in all fairness, I was the first generation of sprinkler dancers.
Yeah.
I was making up my own.
You might have invented it.
Lawnmower, proctology, you know, whatever it was.
Were you in a frat? Were you like the king of the frat?
Hold on one second. I'm so sorry about this. I can't believe you don't know this. You know, in 1997, Rolling Stone magazine discovered me and called me the number one party animal in the country. Wait, sidebar. I'm going to hear your story. The very first time I ever met Natasha... I do not know if you're going to remember this at all, but I said it's when the club was designed the way it was, and you're standing out there with two other comics. I don't
what
remember
club?
Who they were. The Improv.
Oh, okay.
Improv. I come out, I get off stage, and I said something. I go, I said something to the effect of, in passing, you know, yeah, like I think every girl I've ever dated has been raped. And Natasha goes, excuse me?
Wait, hold on. In passing? He's walking by.
In passing.
Oh, hey, Natasha, great tip. By the way, every girl I've ever dated has been raped. See you later.
And I go, and I said, and Natasha, right? Like, looking for her. She goes, no. She goes, I think that's odd that everyone you've dated has been date raped. And I was like, for real? And she was like, yeah.
Well, they've been raped at least one time by me.
And then Natasha said, her eyes went in the back of her head. And she goes, my brother says you're his favorite comic. He saw you the other night. And I was like, really? And you were like, yes. And like walked away. And
I have zero memory of this, by the way.
Okay, yeah. I remember
it
distinctly.
That's because I had dropped something in your drink. And I was sort of bringing her into your world, Bert.
The first time I remember meeting you was on a plane.
Oh, I remember that. But I had already known you. Okay. I'd already known who you were.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Your brother, and then I think I heard you on a podcast saying you have two brothers.
Yeah.
One's a musician that lives out here.
Uh-huh.
And then the other drinks Natty Light so he doesn't get throat cancer.
Sounds about
that's
right.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And by the way, I respect the fuck out of that guy. That guy's got my kind of life plans. Right now, mine is to stop my drinking. I'm going to stop ordering double Tito's and sodas. I was like, I'll slow it down one Tito's a day.
Well, we got, yeah, right. You tried to get him other beer, right?
Well, if you get him like Trader Joe's beer, it's like, it goes down. He's esophagus wrong. Yeah. Like, he needs to be Old Milwaukee. Because I guess that's a very light beer, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't drink beer.
We could do a whole podcast about this, but. And by the way, I want to do a podcast just with your brother and talk about his lifestyles because
he can rough it.
Yeah. So wait, get into your story about how you got into comedy.
Oh, well, I mean, it's not that interesting. I've said it a million times.
Attacked by a wolf.
No, I was living here and I was, you know, trying to get an agent. I came from New York. I was bored. And then
the payphone story.
The payphone story. Oh, well, what's the payphone story?
Well, didn't you have an agent that told you you were too short to ever make it as an actor?
In New York, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So he was like, he made me...
wait, hold on. Can I guess to see what it is? He made you take a picture on an Apple box in a payphone so you look 6 feet tall? Just...
Now we're talking.
He wasn't that interested in my career, no. So I had to keep going back. And then finally, after my third audition with him, he was like, okay, it's really great. He brought all the other agents in. He's like, call me at noon, and we're all going to decide if we're going to sign you. And it's very hard to get an agent in New York. Like, impossible. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe it's happened. And then I called him from – I was going to college at the time, and I called him from, you know, the Upper East Side on a payphone. And he was like, hi, Natasha. It's Al Flanagan. I just had a long meeting with all of the other agents, and we've just decided you're too short to ever make it. So I started, like, having a breakdown on the streets of New York.
There's nothing you can do about that.
It's so crazy.
I started hyperventilating. Oh, and I remember he gave some other... He was like, well, you know, there's people like Holly Hunter, but, you know, they're very rare, and it usually, like, doesn't happen. And, you know, and so then I just started, like, hyperventilating and, like, having, like, heaving, like, because it was so important to me. Anyway, so things like that would happen. And then I was like, I'm moving to LA because I just could not get an agent in New York. Then I moved here and I was just, you know, auditioning for backstage. And then some girl I knew who went to my acting school in New York was like, oh, come see me at the Comedy Store in the Belly Room. And I always knew she was cool. And then I saw her and I was like, oh, her name is Melanie Vesey. And I was like, oh, you could just like stand on stage and like be a bitch.
Really?
Like, I didn't know what it was. I thought it was like, I knew who Jerry Seinfeld was, but I had no recollection.
You didn't know there was different variations of what you could do on
stage. No, or like a scene. I didn't know about the alternative scene. And so then I just tried that in the belly room, and it went amazing. And then I just kept doing it.
Wow. But isn't that like sort of a link to what we were talking about earlier? It's like everybody... When you try to define what is and isn't good comedy, that's the opposite experience that you have as an actual comedian, which is that you have these notions in your mind of what comedy is. You don't even know what it is. You just remember, I used to flip through Comedy Central and I would watch like 30 seconds. I remember Patton Oswalt saying he looked like a lesbian. Turn the channel. Like that, you know, that was about – and then like Dice Man come – you know, like Andrew Dice Clay and like Raw.
But that's
That's for me. I wasn't like a student of the game. Then you get to a comedy, then you get to an open mic, or you get to a club, you get on stage, and then you go, oh, I can sort of, I have to apply these notions of what comedy is to whatever I can do. I can't be Seinfeld.
I do think that a lot of kids out there, a lot of people who are starting, like if I would have seen people like Tig Notaro or Sarah Silverman, like I would have never even tried. Because I had no knowledge of that. You know what I mean? Like, I'd be
that,
like,
yeah.
Oh, these people are so great. So I think it's really hard when you do look at other comedians.
That's what I'm saying.
And then compare yourself to them.
You arrive to an open mic and you get on stage and you realize all I can do is write the jokes that I can write. All I can do is craft the act that I can craft. I can't be another thing. So, and that's, you know, you see sometimes people who are skilled comedians but are like kind of hacky.
Yeah.
When they realize that, have you ever met that person when you're like, oh, they can't get out of the shell that they're in?
I am obsessed with that.
It's an interesting idea,
because,
right?
Yeah, because both Tom Segura and I have had this conversation. When we were young, we idolized Attell, idolized him. And I thought, and I really thought, I remember doing a storytelling show in New York when I'd been doing stand-up maybe 6 months, maybe 8 months, maybe less than 6 months. I remember doing a storytelling show and telling three stories that made it onto my first hour special, if not four. Four stories, one of which became very popular on Rogan, but three stories. And I was like, because storytelling, I was just like, I'll just tell the story. And I happened to tell stories funny because I grew up and I went to an all-boys Catholic high school. And then I remember going back to the comedy club and being like, I wish I could do that on stage. And then another guy that was there was like, I know, right? It seems like so much more better way to do it. And then going back and doing what I thought comedy was, you know, like set up punch. And I think both Segura and I will admit openly that we mimicked so much of Attell, if not his writing style or his delivery style or his point of view, that it wasn't until so late in the game that I was like, oh shit, I don't have to do it the way that everyone does. I can be me. And I think I just said, I'm going to get rid of all the bullshit on my act, all these setup punches that I've written that don't, there's just not, they don't even fit in my act, and I'm going to be myself. I think had I had a tad bit more respect, had Paul F. Tompkins and I not gotten into a fight, I would have been a much better comic much faster.
Because you lived your early comedy career in opposition, walking away from Paul F. Tompkins and towards Dave Attell.
Yep, and what stinks is I thought Paul F. Tompkins was so fucking smart in the way he did comedy. I really respected him.
What happened?
Hung out with him. Hey, man, I'm sorry you got to hear this, Paul, if you're hearing this, and this really sends you through the roof. But
balloons and clowns, motherfucker. Yeah,
I met him, and he was a drinker, and I was a drinker, and so I saw his hour special that day, and then they called me to work with him. And I don't
work with him in an acting thing.
It was Eddie Pepitone, Jen Kirkman, Howard Kramer, and Paul F. Tompkins. It was a night given to Paul to headline, and he had all his friends booked.
And then you got squeezed in.
And then they called me, and they're like, "We want to have like a regular at the club on the show." So I went in to do it, and then Paul was very, in hindsight, he was very polite, but he kicked me off the show. He was like, "I was promised one thing." But the problem was that I had hung out with him the night before, and I thought I had made a friend, and one that I respected immensely. And I was like, I watched him work. I watched all those guys work, and they're all alt comics, and they were all so fascinating at the way they approached the art form. I mean, I remember Howard Kramer did an Ahmad Rashad joke without telling anyone it was Ahmad Rashad. You had to get it was Ahmad Rashad, and that they wanted to kill Pat O'Brien. Remember Pat O'Brien was doing all those... It was like so fucking...
And Howard's very funny.
Yeah, Jen Kirkman had a joke that to this day is one of my favorite jokes, especially now that I'm in therapy. She was like... Her friend was like, "It sounds like you pay your therapist to win arguments." And Jen goes, "I'm not paying him to lose." And I was like, it was like, you know, where you get welcomed in. And then the very next day I show up so excited to work with these four people again. So excited to watch them work. So excited to have beers afterwards.
Wait, you did your set the first night and then you came back like Saturday.
It was great.
You did well.
Yeah, it was great.
And then you came back. No one called you. And then you came back. Like, let's say that happened on Friday. You came back Saturday for your spot.
And they were like, "This has gotten really uncomfortable. I'm sorry." And I was like, "What?" And they're like, "You don't know?" And I walked over and my name has been marked out of the lineup with a black magic marker. And I was like,
"Were you...
That's pretty humiliating.
What club was this?" Very humiliating, especially when you think you just made four new friends that you really respect in this business. You know how that is when you're like, wow. Yeah.
What club was this?
The Improv.
In Hollywood.
I don't understand why the Improv is like, "Oh, Paul F. Tompkins, we need to put one of our comics up." That just seems weird.
I don't know. So, I can't defend anything, and I won't try to... I'm not going to try to slam Paul F. Tompkins.
So what happened?
But it just hurt my feelings, and then I went on Jason Nash's podcast and talked about it, probably in a shitty way. Paul F. Tompkins said I was a liar, that's not what happened, and I was like, all right. And then I ran into him one time, and I was like, I wanted to... like, what? There was no beef, really. I don't just think he just didn't like me. But because of that, I was like, well, I'm not going to go to the fucking alt rooms because these four people that I met that I thought I was all cool with really didn't like me. I felt like a real fool is what I felt like. I mean, I felt like just a fool that I had been like duped.
Especially because you liked them
so
much.
Were you the host?
No, I just did a set. And so,
Invited Paul on this show?
No, I don't know.
It's so weird. I find Paul to be the most like genteel, kind.
Why don't you invite him?
Unless you're not.
I mean, you guys are
look
opposites.
Like me. Yeah. If the idea that I have a man cave, You think Paul Tompkins wants to come into a man cave? Like,
he'd appreciate it.
I don't think so. He has in an ironic way, maybe. Like,
what do you think? He just hangs out in the same room that his wife is in all the time?
No, no. He's got like an Oscar Wilde dedication room.
He has a sitting room. Yeah. It's the same idea.
A sitting room. No, but like, what, you know what I felt like, in all honesty? Did you ever see the movie in the 80s, whatever movie this is, where the not cool girl gets invited to the sleepover with the cool chicks? And then she goes into the bathroom and realizes they're all talking shit about her. And that they don't like her, and that she was the joke to them.
That's got to be pretty hard for Rolling Stone's number one party animal of 1992.
Maybe. For a man, you have no idea how accurate that statement is. For a man who's making his living off of boozing and having a good time, to meet four boozers that aren't frat boys was eye-opening. Like, really, you got to remember, I only knew dudes who did cocaine and drank that were like me. I didn't meet other people. And so Jen and I are cool. Howard and I are cool. Eddie and I are cool. But the Paul F. Tompkins thing stuck with me. So I think,
and also maybe it wasn't about you as much as just being resentful that someone would tell you to book, how to book your show.
I'm certain that's what it was. You know, and I'm certain his frustration.
I'd be annoyed too if someone was like, you can book your show, but then we're going to put our person on. Like,
yeah,
that's obnoxious.
100%. And by the way, I've been
in his position. Like, your people aren't funny enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And so anyway, but I think that
have you been in this position?
Yeah, but I'm not, I don't like confrontation. So if someone says, hey, we put this person on the show, I go, cool. And then I try to find the good side in that person and try to be humble. Because I know for a fact that I've been in the other, that sometimes some kid gets on the show, gets shoved on the show, and it's not right, and it's not a good fit, and he's bombing. But it maybe just made his year that he's working with me. And so I know that. I understand that. And the fact that he gets to drink with me after the show and we hang out and some girl asks him to sign her tit and he's like, dude, this is the best night of my fucking life. I understand the responsibility of that. I'm not saying that Paul didn't at the time, but I'm just saying, like,
I have a feeling Paul doesn't get a lot of sign my tit requests as well. That doesn't seem
like
it.
Sure,
it's like sign my ascot.
We're very different grown men. I understand that. However,
wait, you have people sign your tits?
I signed a tit last week.
You signed tits?
I had some girl ask me if I could sign her titties.
I've signed a tit.
Sign tits all the time,
yeah.
But male tits.
I will exclusively sign pussies of female comedians.
Which is so complicated.
Yeah, it's hard. It's definitely, no one likes the request, yeah. But in the end, people usually come away from it really grateful that it went down.
I got asked to sign a dick one time.
Oh, really?
And
did you do it?
100% went in for the kill, had it in my hand, and saw every phone come up, and I went, cannot be signing a dick right now. This is not something you want in your digital footprint. That's the one picture that'll come up is me with a cock in my hand. But yeah, but anyway, I think going back to our point is learning how to do it. I think because of that experience, I always felt uncomfortable at the UCB.
Right.
And so I never learned to explore my voice. I just went to the, I really went on the road, kind of.
By the way, the truth, the conventional wisdom should be that every comedian could use some more club chops. Every alt comedian. And yeah. Every club comedian could use some more alt chops. Like and by the way, alt and club, obviously, it's almost cliche at this point to say there's no difference anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's true. I mean, it's not like what Bill Burr is doing is like so insanely different from what Patton
is
doing.
I would say he's crossing over a little bit.
He's funny. Like, I mean, yeah. I mean, but I remember we did that New Year's show and it was like in San Francisco and it was like you and me and Rory and Pete Holmes and Hannibal, maybe?
I think so.
And then it was, and you went last, and it was like, there's just a bunch of comics doing comedy.
Well, I think the thing that puts us all in common, and this is the thing that I think rides on both sides, is being able to make strangers laugh.
100%.
Like, if you can make a stranger laugh, that's the key. Same thing with the cellar, the store, the Laugh Factory, any club you perform at, if you become comfortable performing there, and then you can make your friends that work there laugh, or the people that come to that type of room laugh, then it doesn't become a challenge. It's a real uphill battle I'm having sometimes in the OR, is that I take the stuff that works on the road in there, and it doesn't always do well, and I go, that's the real testament of how it's performing. It's because if they're not laughing, and by the way, it's dialed in to laugh there. I'm like, then it's not funny yet.
That's interesting. Why do you think, what do you think it is about the OR that, the OR used to be, when I first got past there, I felt like the OR was a fucking stiff room. It was a difficult room. It had about a 70% good set ratio, I would say.
Okay, I'm there. I'll take there. I'm a little lower than that, but yeah.
So, yeah, but current day, you're saying it's right like now. That. That's interesting because I feel like it's changed to being.
The lights are sometimes up really high
in the OR.
Uh huh. Oh no, no. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the main room.
The main room, I find difficult.
Oh, main room is a lob toss for me.
Really,
that's I so love the main room because my. I think I'm also more comfortable performing in front of a large group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go into the OR, it's not, it's a lot of, like, it reminds me of performing in New York, like performing at the Cellar. Performing
it's very
at
the much the Cellar, right?
Yeah. And the, by the way, my favorite room is the Belly Room.
Belly Room's awesome.
Dude, that's where I started because I don't think I had such a great set. Same as what they say, that she built it for women.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have kept doing comedy if my first set wasn't like I killed in the Belly Room in a bringer show.
Oh, I can take a story that I am kind of trying to figure out into the Belly Room and really find the good stuff in it. It's like something.
That's cool.
But isn't it true that, like, a lot of comedy is just weird coincidental magic? Like, I remember there was Chris Fairbanks. You know Chris?
Of course. Just like, had hip surgery.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, just got his hips replaced.
Jesus Christ.
I know. Did?
Chris Fairbanks.
All that skateboarding.
Yeah. No. I said the same thing. He goes, no, I guess it's just hereditary.
Wow, that is
so
crazy.
Yeah, it can happen in your 30s and 40s, too.
Well, anyway, Chris, when I first moved to L.A., was like my albatross. Anytime Chris walked into a room that I was performing on, and I was new to town, and I was trying to impress people, if Chris walked in, I would go, fuck. Because I'm going to have a bad set. Because Chris Fairbanks is here. I don't know.
He's so good?
No. It was just a fucking random magic.
He's not even that good.
No, Chris is one of the worst comedians.
No, but he would kill because he does that wordplay.
Chris is so funny.
Yeah.
He is really.
But it had nothing to do with Chris. It had to do with like the weird like mystical magic of coincidence, right?
Yeah.
And Chris would walk in and I'd go, I'm going to have a bad set. And then so... Then finally I had a good set in front of Chris, and then that weird spell was broken. And then I was – you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So to some degree, your experience in the OR is probably just the weird coincidence of like those crowds on the nights that you happen to get booked at that – the person that you happen to be following.
Sometimes there's a physics of a room. Like
for
the
sure
Belly
there
Room
is.
Doesn't have
but
a bar
Bert
in the back.
Bert is such a powerful comedian. There's no world in which I think like, oh, yeah, Bert's not – yeah, yeah, you're not going to do well in the OR ever. Well, that doesn't make sense.
Here's the other thing, and I'm certain that we all three probably subscribe to this, but I refuse to use the store as an ego stroke for me because that is not the purpose of it for me. In the main room, I'll take stories that I know are working and I'll try to finagle them. But in the OR, I'm bringing stuff that is. Kind of working on the road that I'm suspect of
mm-hmm.
to throw it up against the wall to say like, hold on, where is this joke quiet?
But sometimes you do need to throw in some good stuff just so they trust you, so that they'll trust the new stuff.
Or I watched Tosh go up in the OR, and this is what also changed my opinion about how to work that room. Mm-hmm. I watched Tosh go up and only do new jokes. Now he's Daniel Tosh, but I was like, I was just respecting that. I was like, I respect that. And I watched Judd Apatow do that. I was like, I respect that. And then
it worked. And they both killed.
They did. They did 70%. It was like okay. It was like really cool to watch those guys work. You know, like Louis does the same stuff. And I was like, if I want to be. One of the four people on Elle magazine. Then I better
you want to stand next to Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah,
you better step it up.
But
you want to be in Cars 4?
Yeah. By the way, if you're listening to this in Cars 4, I'm fucking. She's in Cars 3.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
What did Christella you think it was?
Is.
Yeah, I know Christella. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to guess what kind of stereotypical car they made her.
It's a lowrider.
Is it?
No.
Is it really?
It's got to be. It's got to be something with lights underneath it.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I haven't seen that movie.
By the way, Christella, you know I love you. And everyone I've talked shit about, including you, Paul, on this
podcast.
You're
not talking shit about Christella.
I'm not talking shit about anybody. And if I am, I'm sorry. I try to use the store as a place to recharge my battery and hang out with comics. That's number one. And try to do newer stuff that I can take on the road. That's number two.
That you is know? Smart. I mean, my thing with the store is I like to go up. And I love the room physics of the room, so I'll always I just love doing improvisational comedy.
That's the other thing about you, though, is you're someone that I almost want to see you bomb more than do well because you're someone that I think every comic would say we'd like to watch you work. Like, that's the cool thing. And that's the thing I think some people – there are comics that we'll all agree, I won't say any names, I have no interest in watching them work. If they don't kill, they bombed. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like comics that were just like, that are like, they're just, I bring the thunder. That's what I do. This is my act. I'm Thunderbringer.
Right.
Those aren't my favorite comics. My favorite comics would be like to go up and watch you improv and really work it and knead it into something that turns into something good. That's when I go, oh, that was fun watching.
I would rather watch any comedian I respect bomb than kill, because I've seen everybody kill.
Yeah,
they're all good.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to see.
Oh yeah, that's fun.
How do you bomb? Is like the real. That's the real stripes of a comedian.
Jim Norton bombing is my favorite thing I've ever seen.
Oh yeah,
Jim
that
Norton
can't
bombing,
happen very much.
Jim Norton bombing is fucking magical. He is 1,000 times funnier to the back of the room in the middle of a bomb than he would ever be on stage in his hour special. Same with Attell. I remember Attell's asides to himself, I would just sit in the back and fucking love it. I did Mediocre in the OR last week, and Tommy and Adam were back there. And
Tommy came back?
No, Tom Segura and Adam were in the back. And I will admit, I did mediocre.
Sure.
I said some things maybe I shouldn't have said, and I tried to work my way out of it. Definitely came off a little pro-Trumpy. And I was like, in my head, I got off stage, I was like, I could have gone a lot better. Segura and Tom both were like, that was fucking hilarious. And the thing is, because they're watching you.
Are you pro-Trump?
No.
Okay, good.
But I do think, actually...
Although I do like what he stands for, but yeah,
I hear what you're saying.
Spend some time at a water park in Southern California. You'll be very pro Trump.
Well, that's what I was gonna say.
The numbers in half, Trump. Let's get to the slide.
Speaking of the Paul F. Tompkins story versus like I did think that there is a connection to our current political climate that we're in. Forgetting Trump because he's so divisive of a figure, like that feeling that you were describing of being like. The bro, for lack of a better word, who's being like accepted and or rejected by like the cool nerd kids.
Yeah.
I feel like, tell me if you agree, the Trump election was a referendum on like bro-ness. It's like all the alphas who'd been turned into social betas were saying essentially like, you know what? Fuck you. We're not going to accept that nerds rule the roost. Like, I told Natasha right after Trump got elected, like, I feel like that's the death of the nerd. Like, nerd culture is over, and we're now experiencing this, like, new wave of, like, man and masculinity being cool again. And, like, the social justice warrior being, like, the beta cuck nerd.
The number one movie star is no longer Seth Rogen. It's The Rock.
Yeah, there's something to that, right?
I said when he got elected... Because I, by the way, I'm still very much a bro. Like I'm going to Orlando this week. I'm looking for someone to throw a fucking lake party. Like I'm.
What's a leg party?
A lake party. Yeah, like cause there's big lakes down there. I want to go wakeboarding. I want to hang out. I want to have some cold beers in the afternoon. Like I'm looking for that. I love that. I love partying after the shows with my fans. I love if someone's like, who wants to do a body shot? I love hearing that. Like. Mm-hmm. So
I'm sorry, but I'm kind of on Paul F. Tompkins' side at this point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But when
there's
when
something
he got,
interesting about that, though, you can't just marginalize a huge
that
group.
Someone saying a body shot fills you with like
if
a
you,
good feeling.
Oh, if someone goes, if
I
someone
think
goes,
that that's where
a
the
body
divide
shot,
is.
You're almost like you can hear Tom Cruise playing the piano in the background.
Can I be honest? I don't really know what a body shot is.
Oh, we used to do belly
is
button
that
body
when
shots.
You take it from a girl's tits?
No, it's where you salt on the neck and they lick your neck, and then you both do a shot of tequila.
Who is both? The woman
like
that
you're
with?
You and the woman. So
it's like frat boy shit.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But what I'm saying...
Frat boy shit can be super enjoyable.
I'm good.
That's what I'm...
they're my natural enemy. I'm sorry.
Well, this is what I'm getting at. It's like, and by the way, it's not like the death of the nerd...
I would have had someone else kick you off the show. The way, I probably wouldn't have done it myself.
Do you know that every frat boy loves the fact that you don't love a frat boy? Because they just want you to love... Like, they're just big, dumb dogs that are like... They're like, I am cool. No, listen... I do like a nice fucking sleeveless shirt every now and then.
I like a flip and a flop. I like both.
I took mine off before I walked back here. I love flip-flops. I still wear flip-flops.
I guess I'm not friends with any people like that.
Well, this
I
is
guess
what
I'm what you would call a snob.
You're definitely what I would call a snob, and you're my wife. But what I would say that it was inevitable that there was a backlash. Like
yes.
People, and especially like, I forget Trump. Because Trump is such a bad example because he was
him?
A metaphor and then he became reality. And then the reality of Trump had nothing to do with the – not zero to do with, but a lot to, very little to do with what the people wanted him to represent. All of a sudden, he's this other thing. But eventually, you know, men were gonna come back and say, like, comic book dorks can't take culture over completely. We won't let that happen. Physically, we can beat you, and we will beat you.
Well, I might have said it to it was either Burr, Rogan, or Stanhope that night that he got elected. I said, because I know, like, I know a lot of my friends are still these guys. They are. I grew up with them. I was like, the people who elected Trump, the men who elected Trump, were guys who weren't done saying faggot.
Like,
they were
true.
Like, they were like, you took that word away from us too early. I understood. It's
that's
true.
Smart.
The word got taken away so quickly out of the lexicon. And by the way, I support that. Like, I listen to Todd Glass's podcast with Mark Maron. I don't think anyone realized the impact of the word. But I think there are a lot of guys who weren't. It was like, imagine learning the N-word but knowing nothing of slavery. Being like a young Finland kid saying the N-word and then getting in trouble for it. And you're like, wait, I really had nothing to do with that. It was a word that I used to sing in songs. I didn't know I couldn't say it. And so.
But they knew they couldn't say it, the bros.
No. By the way, you could say it. I mean,
you're essentially saying, like, a dude that is saying to his straight buddy, like, dude, quit hogging all those body shots. You're being a total faggot.
Yeah, like, they didn't. I don't think. And I will say this, the vast majority of men that said it weren't saying it in understanding the impact it would have on a gay child, possibly their own, who heard it and thought everything they stand for is bad, and now they don't want to come out of the closet and possibly commit suicide. I don't think anyone realized the impact of that. I think guys saying your car looks gay, they didn't understand the impact of that entirely, because I know I didn't.
Here's what I think happened, right, is just my opinion, is that, you know, you're right. Is that most people that were using, and you're just using that one word as a sort of metaphor for the iceberg that is, like, you know, whatever PC culture has punished, like, non-PC people for doing, right? Yeah. And that is this, a lot of the current political climate is a backlash against people who didn't mean anything negative being told that they were the biggest piece of shit in the world.
And sometimes publicly shamed into ruining their life.
Yes, although I would push back and say, like, how often is that truly happening to bros versus anybody? Because the public shaming, it falls on both sides of the political spectrum, right? Just as much.
It happens more to women, I feel like.
Do you think so?
I feel like women are the funniest people on the internet. I will say that, hands down. I think they're much funnier than any male comic. Women, female comics are hilarious on the internet. But I do feel like...
That is a very odd statement.
it is an odd statement.
Female comics are hilarious on the internet?
Yeah, and I think.
More than men?
I definitely think so.
I just feel like it's so individual. All right. I never thought of it like that.
But I guess I'm saying, like, public shaming, I do think both sides of the political landscape are victims of public shaming.
Yeah.
But what we're talking about when we talk about, like, you know, free speech versus PC culture or whatever is definitely, like, a thing that people are reacting against, right? And part of what the current political landscape is people saying free speech is important, which it is. But it's... Like, everybody, what happens is when you lob an accusation at someone, they retreat into being defensive. And then the next time you lob it, they are defending from the position not of what they've said, but now of what they've said plus their defensiveness. And that is a recipe for, like kind of communicative disaster, right?
Yes.
Because, like, by the time the 10th iteration of accusation has happened, people are going, I want to say the N-word. It's like, no, you don't even want to say the N-word.
You
just don't want to be called a racist, right? Let's start from where you first started from. And instead, what's happening is people are saying, or, like, lobbing out these things that are, like you're saying, obviously offensive. Obviously, like you're saying, trigger warnings are absurd. What happens, it's this idea called nutpicking. Have you ever heard of this before?
No.
It's like one of these logical fallacies, right? It's nutpicking. And it's that you argue against the position that bothers you from only using the most absurd example of that position, right?
Okay.
So, like, trigger warnings are the perfect example, right? Like, most of the time a person says trigger warning, you're a grown man with a mind that is developed and is like, what, you can't deal with something that is objectionable to you? You can't hear it without freaking out, covering your ears, and running out of the club screaming? That's fucking ridiculous. And it is fucking ridiculous. But if you try to get to like the kernel of what they're really saying, which is like, what if you are, anybody can wrap their brains around being a young gay person sitting in a circle of like bros that are saying, or not even bros, just people that think it's funny to say, you know, you're being a complete faggot, right? Yeah. Anybody can kind of wrap their brain around that, like, oh, what that must feel like.
Yeah.
So what we do is when we argue from this position of the most absurd example, right, for like Evergreen State right now, people are freaking out about that.
Oh, my God.
Evergreen University, are you hearing about this?
No, what happened? I've stopped. I've only reading the news once a week now.
They had a day where the people of color demanded white people not come to school so they could have an easier day. And I think the majority, it was a very liberal college, majority said yes, except for this one professor, who, by the way, is a cultural biologist, so, which is kind of confusing. I wonder if it's part of what he does for a job. I don't know what he does for a job. I can never talk about that. But he said, I refuse to do that. I find that, because he's Jewish, he's like, I find that you asking anyone to say that they're not allowed to do something because of their race is racism. And then they literally took over the fucking campus.
Who took over the campus?
The students. Predominantly black, I think.
Because and the Jewish guy said that?
Well, yeah. Evergreen State, is it Evergreen State or Evergreen? Evergreen, by the way, it is the epicenter and always has been the epicenter of the theoretics of the hard left. It's not like we're talking about like UC Davis here. Evergreen has always been like so far out there in terms of its leftist sort of aspirations. By the way, there should be places like that.
There definitely should be. You need someone to be making fucked up food in order to have new foods introduced to you.
Yeah, and it's just as there is Evergreen State, there is Bob Roberts University. You know, is that what it's called? I think that's what it's called. Super insane evangelical Christian right. So university. So that basically what they're asking to me, if I'm sort of I haven't looked into it, but
listened to Rogan's podcast with that professor. Fucking fascinating.
With the professor who said no.
Yeah.
My gut feeling tells me that's totally fucking insane, right?
Yeah. That he said no?
No, they're asking for a day without white people going to work. Right? I mean, that my gut feeling tells me I need to read more and really figure out like what even was the ideological underpinnings behind it.
It's the flip. There was a day where, you remember the day without a Mexican here in L.A.?
Sure, yeah.
They used to do it a day without people of color just to show how important those people were. And those people of color said, yeah, fuck that, flip it. We want no white people so we can see how easy life could be without you. And so this guy's like, no, you're not allowed to do that. And then...
Did the guy get fired?
I don't know what's going on with them now, but they have death threats against them. Now these students have started a lynch mob, a literal lynch mob, going through the campus looking for students who agree with this professor and threatening them. And then they took over the dean's office and told the dean he wasn't allowed to use his hands because if he used his hands, that was a trigger. That was a threatening.
It sounds like there's probably like 10 people at the helm of this.
No, there's a lot more. And it's based off of, it's started, its foundings, its grassroots are coming from the Black Lives Matters people. So the Black Lives Matters people found, fuck, we can make some money.
Well, let me just stop you there.
Wait, okay. How do they make money, first of all?
Hold on. Okay, fine. I do want to hear what you're saying about money.
They're like, this Black Lives Matters thing, we can get people to agree with us. So they would go, they go in and they find a thing like this. By the way, I listened to this half drunk on a plane. But they go in and they start, like just like any revolutionary culture, go in and plant the seeds. You guys should really fuck this. Flip it. And they started it. And now it's like...
I still don't understand where the money comes in.
Shirts and stuff.
I don't know.
Merch.
It's like the road.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
There,
I'll
sign your shirt.
Merchandise.
The thing about Black Lives Matter that really bugs me, and I'm not saying you're doing this, although I think it happens a lot. I hear it a lot. People talk about Black Lives Matter as if it is a organization with a leadership and a leadership struggle and a structure and hierarchy.
It's got to be an organization.
It is completely decentralized. There is no Black Lives Matter person. There is a person that started Black Lives Matter, but the idea that like,
I'll tell you right now if you're right or wrong. You
okay,
ready?
Let's hold on.
Based on if
and
they
if
have
I'm
a website,
wrong, I demand you edit this out.
Based on if they have a website. If they have a website,
I'm sure they have a bunch of websites.
No, if they have one, I guess they probably do have. BlackLivesMatters.net, Black Lives Matter. There's probably millions of them.
It's a completely decentralized movement that was started in response to what they think, and I think what statistically is proven out, to be a disproportionate amount of violence that it wrought upon young black people at the hands of the police, right? Yeah. That's what it started
That's
from.
What it started as, yeah.
Right. So now it's expanded because just like everything, just like comedy, just like politics, just like Trump, exactly like Trump, you can grab a ideological current, take ownership of it, just like the alt-right, right? Within the alt-right, you have people that are saying, oh, no, we're the alt-right. We're Nazis. We're straight-up white identitarian, white nationalists. Yeah. And then you have people who are saying, no, I'm alt-right, and you're not alt-right. That's not alt-right. Alt-right is this.
Yeah, we're embarrassed by the term alt-right. We're looking for a different term.
We're going to call ourselves the new right. We're going to call – you've hijacked it from us. But both parties are saying, no, we're alt-right. No, we're alt-right.
Yeah.
What you represent is the antithesis of what the alt-right is. So to say – not that you did this, but I've heard this a lot. To say
I probably have done this.
I mean, people do it. I hear it a lot because I really – I don't consider myself a centrist at all, but I consider – because I do – I am a left-leaning person.
Yeah.
But I do consider myself like a person that sees the warts and the illogic of the left in the same way I see the warts and the illogic of the right.
I'm that.
Yeah.
We all should be that. I do believe that there is – a need for whatever's happening at Evergreen to make changes. You have to have drastic people wanting change.
Right.
Like it must have sounded ridiculous to when they were like, hold on one second. You mean black people are just going to go into our swimming pools? That does not make sense.
Well, exactly. And what nut picking is it takes the most extreme person on the ideological group that you disagree with and says, see what I'm saying about that group? It is exactly like me saying, I hate Republicans because David Duke is a Republican.
Yeah.
And you're like, but David Duke is like a fringe, insane, fucking weird Nazi idiot. Well, no, I think that just represents Republicans. And then, by the way, there's like a centrist Republican in this milieu that's going, why are you casting aspersions on all of us as a group? Fuck that. And that's exactly what happened in the Trump election, which is people saying, why are you – you say all bros are dumb because I met a dumb bro. It's the same thing as saying Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization because I saw a guy with a Black Lives Matter t-shirt on and a Molotov cocktail. Those two things aren't the same thing.
What if you met 600 dumb bros? I'm just curious.
Wait. You never dated a bro?
No.
Never dated a bro?
No.
I dated the equivalent of a bro.
That's
all I
dated.
Of course.
That's all I dated were like fucking bimbos. Like,
really?
We used to call the girls muffs in high school. And then the boys were called, what were they called? It was so good.
See, we've got our subsets of bros.
Yeah, there's like a taxonomy of
bros. We have like.
The fellas.
The fellas.
They were called the fellas.
Like
the muffs and the fellas.
I think that like the comedy store actually represents the kind of more like eyebrow cocked, like libertarian, like social deconstructor white guy voice of comedy that, by the way, who are the big comedians right now when you think about it?
Rogan Burr.
Louis C.K. is not D'Elia. A bro.
Louis not a Louis not
he
a bro.
Louis is. I'm not going to say anything that even could be construed negative.
All right, but a bro could not make Louis. A bro doesn't
have
Woody Allen and jazz influences.
I don't agree. I mean,
well,
honestly,
I'm thinking of a bro like
what you're saying is right. Like it's D'Elia, it's Rogan, it's Burr, it's people that
Jim
are
Jim Jeffries.
Yeah, it's people that are. By the way, all of those people. I don't know if I don't agree with all of them, but I don't. I would say. You know, you love Burr, but you wouldn't say Burr's a particularly politically, like, you know, social justice-y guy.
But that's what you like about him.
Exactly.
Because he's saying the thing that you're like, oh, I didn't know I could think that.
Yeah. Oh, Burr is – let me tell you something. And once again, if this is going to be the podcast where I just talk up – I'm talking shit about everyone.
I don't think you're talking shit about people.
Burr is a bro. Like, Burr's the guy that calls me. He's like, dude, let's hang out and have a cigar and just bullshit, no podcast, just have a cigar and a glass of whiskey. That's bro behavior right there.
Cigar, glass of whiskey, and, like, fraternity body shots.
Okay.
In my opinion. I don't see Bill Burr doing body shots.
No, Bill Burr has definitely done a body shot in the past.
I bet he hasn't. I bet he hasn't.
I would love to call him.
Call him right now.
Important question.
By the way, no, you text Bill this one because if you call him, he's like, dude, what the fuck, man? What are you Don't call me on a podcast. We can be friends and we can work together, but let's not fucking mix the two up, bro.
All right, I'm very curious to see what the answer is going to be. And then, wait, I should text a really alternative comedian and see if they've done a body shot. Who do you like? Rory Scovel?
Have you ever done a body shot?
What do you think? Who's an alt comic I could text?
I'm more interested in if Bill Burr's done a body shot.
I just think this would be a nice experiment. Let me do Rory Scovel.
Oh, okay.
No.
I'm trying to find somebody that would.
Rory's definitely done a body shot.
No, I know. I was trying to cheat a little bit.
You could ask Nick Thune.
Nick Thune's done a body shot.
He went to Bible camp. That's what they do. It's the blood of Christ off of the body of your pastor. All right.
I think Louis is a... See, I think there is a term of like enlightened bro. Where
yes.
Like you're a bro growing up.
Philosobro,
we call him. You loved fucking hitting a bike ramp. You loved tackle football. If you hooked up with a chick, you told your friends about it. Like that kind of bro.
I think
who gets to a certain age where you go like, for me it was moving to New York and going like, oh, I guess I should listen more. Like just listen and then not and I remember I went the first show I ever
That's
saw
a
was
a good first step. I think I should listen more.
Well, YouTube actually, to be honest. By the way, I find the YouTube educated political newly politically red pilled right winger to be pretty odious and obnoxious, but I also understand what a powerful tool YouTube is. YouTube definitely and the internet in general definitely brought ideas to people that, not just bros, this has become a referendum on bros, but it's not. It's to everybody that had been sort of sequestered in a kind of intellectual vacuum, who then could go on YouTube and go like, holy shit, I can hear all this crazy information.
Dude, that is, you have no idea how, in our fraternity, there were two camps. By the way, in a group of guys who all decided to join an organization and allowed themselves to be hazed for 5 months, demeaned, beaten, like,
and to also demean women together.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
I think that is part of the culture.
Do you think that's a part of fraternity culture?
Yes.
I think that it depends on what fraternity you're talking about.
I think there's a lot of different fraternities. They're definitely like, but I think if you're going to broad stroke it, I don't think demeaning women is the right thing. But I do think when men get around men, they do start to simply not worry about hitting the corners that tight. I think they're like, you know, I'll say whatever the fuck I want to say. It's all guys. I can't get in trouble. But in our camp, there were two. This was like you were either smoked pot or you didn't smoke pot. And then within those camps.
Oh, interesting. The smoke potters were like the thinking man.
The thinking man. And they called that the dark side. And
they
didn't like the guys who did hallucinogens and
smoke pots. Really,
we were all a little more sensitive. And then there was also another camp in our fraternity. It was those who chewed Skoll versus those who chewed Copenhagen.
So wait, hold on. Let me see if I can figure it out. Was Copenhagen, was that the more enlightened people?
No.
Skoll was. What's Skoll about?
Skoll had a mint flavor to
it. Oh, right.
So that was kind of like girly.
You were softer.
That's
you were
gay.
Softer.
That's and, very gay. Yeah.
And then I'll break it down. If you dip Skoll, you definitely didn't say the N-word.
Interesting. And if you dip cherry Skoll, you fuck dudes.
Dude, people would look at you weird when you offered it up to people. if you were like, hey, you got
funny.
A dip? And they're like, yeah, I got cherry Skoll. They'd be like, never mind. Why don't you go use a lady's head?
That was the
women's bathroom.
That's so interesting.
It was.
I do think that hallucinogens, by the way, are in a large way the solution to a lot of the rancor and acrimony that we have between political
Say
ideologies.
Say that again?
I think that every group,
yeah,
the alt-right, the left, the comedy store, the alt-comedians, you, Paul F. Tompkins, everybody should go to Joshua Tree together and do hallucinogens, because I do think that like one of the realizations that you have on hallucinogens is that people are like one and that we're in this together and that the most important thing is to like try to find harmony in a disharmonious universe.
Well, I think that's one of the things that, you know, bugged me about comedy early on is I remember the first show I knew David Wayne randomly, the guy who's he's a director. He was in Stella. Yeah, he was in Stella, and he was in The State. Well, Stella used to do a show. Michael Ian Black, Michael Showalter, and
big fans of all of them.
Big David Wayne. So I met them in Greece in 1995.
Doing comedy?
Nope. I was just partying, and I was a big State fan. Like, that was, like, my show, and I saw
you were doing
them.
Shots off the body of, like, a Greek god statue, right?
Wait, can I tell you the broest fucking moment ever? So, I meet the state. Now, mind you, I was on the dark side, and I dipped Skull, okay?
Okay, sure.
So I'm the softest. I'm the softest. I love Cherry Skull.
When that's delicious.
They came out with Cherry Skull when I was in college, and they sent a sample package to our fraternity. I was like, this is my new jam. Oh, my God, you got peach? So I find the state, which is definitively alternative comedy in its infancy, and I love it. I love it wholeheartedly. And we would quote the state to each other. We go backpacking through Europe, and I see the state at our hostel that we're staying at called the Pink Palace.
They're staying at a hostel, the three of them?
No, the entire state.
Oh, like all of them are there.
All of them are there.
How cool.
And so I see them and I lose my shit. The first one I knew was David Wayne. I just recognized him first. Joe Latrulio and David Wayne are the first ones I recognized. By the way, I meet David Wayne and I'm like, dude, I'm the biggest fan of the state. I think I want to be a comedian. I just robbed that train in Russia. I was like, I think I want to be a comedian.
Did you say I just robbed that train in Russia?
I robbed a train in Russia. Let's put a pin in that. Anyway. So I tell David Wayne I want to be a comedian. I want to know. And David Wayne gives me his phone number. He says, this is my phone number.
That's so nice.
Dude, the sweetest guy in the world. I will say, ever since then, I could never remind him who I was, the guy he met in Europe. Like, he'd always be like, the guy I played volleyball with? I was like, no, the guy.
He just gives his phone number up.
So it's the same phone number. I think he still has the same fucking phone number. So we're at this place called the Pink Palace. This is a place where they told you when you got there, they were like, take all your clothes off, go to your bed, take your sheet off, we're going to have a toga party. So I meet the state back there, and I had been there before. I had already been there before. I came back. That's how much of a bro palace this was. Everyone's naked. All Euro trash. Everyone's partying. And then Dr. George, the guy who owns it, would come out with a stack of plates. And everyone would gather in a circle, and David Wayne's goes, what's happening? I go, dude, you got to experience this. This is fucking amazing. So they start doing the Greek music. I don't do it right, but you know that Greek music? And Dr. George starts dancing, and this guy's walking around with a stack of like 100 plates, balancing them. And he's like, what's going on? And I go, you'll see. Just lean forward when I say to lean forward. He's like, okay. And then this guy, Dr. George, would give you, come, he'd pour a shot of ouzo in your mouth, then grab a plate and smack it over your head and crash it. And everyone's ducking their head in the center. And David Wayne looks at this and he goes, I'm not doing that. I'm like, this is the best part of it. I'm like, do two for me. Like, but yeah, those.
That's amazing.
Funny that David couldn't. He never. You're like, you know, the guy who wanted you to smash a plate on your head.
Every time, if I called him right now, he'd go, "Are you the guy that I played my best friend was an assistant to him on some movie, A Wet Hot American Summer. My best friend probably has worked with David Wayne more than anyone. And every time I run into David Wayne, I go, I met you in Europe. He's like, the guy I played volleyball with. I'm like, no.
You should get more specific.
So
I have to pee. I just have
go
to.
Pee. Go pee.
Where do I do
just
it?
Pee in the backyard.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Dude, I'm a bro.
Yeah.
You guys can't do
you
this
want
at your
him
house?
To pee in the backyard?
Yeah. Just pee anywhere. Yeah. Preferably not on the pavers, but yeah, pee anywhere.
Your wife doesn't care that people are peeing in the backyard?
She's married to me. What's she going to say? She's like, I'm not going to stop him. Because I come out here and I like to, like, you know, at the end of the night, if everyone's asleep, I like to get weird. And
what do you call getting weird?
Like, put on the Smiths, open a bottle of wine, get in a Speedo, cowboy hat, and just fucking dance. Like kind of like when Matthew McConaughey got busted for playing bongos naked, I was like, I get that. Like, I've been there.
Could you do that sober?
Yeah, but then I start questioning my sanity, I think. I definitely have done it sober, but
that
I start.
That sounds fun.
I start questioning my sanity and going, "Hey, man, am I slipping away?" Like, I love it. It's one of my favorite things. Especially when I worked for Travel Channel, I'd come home and sleep when I landed and get up late because I was like coming in from Asia or something.
So you'd be up all night.
Come in here and rediscover the Talking Heads. Like, just, you know what I mean? Like they're.
Get high, right?
Well, I don't have to get high. I can, like, sometimes I'll get on the treadmill with a box of wine and I'll walk. Yeah.
He just said sometimes he gets on the treadmill with a box of wine.
That was like.
And what? Straps it to your back and puts like a hose in?
No, this is going to be the most bro-iest thing I've ever said. I'll watch Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives with the sound off and listen to music.
Let me just say, there are things about male culture bro culture that are undeniable.
Undeniable.
Undeniably fun, undeniably cool, and vice versa with, like, snobbish hipster culture.
Oh, man. If it was, like, I can appreciate all sides of culture. I really can. But I think that's, like, I don't get that old manny, like, I don't understand these millennials. Although there are parts of, like, softness I don't understand. Like, I mean, part of life is failure, and I think you need to have failure to figure out. I don't think I'm going to sway on that on either side.
I think that's part of the issue with the evergreen thing is this idea that life, not only the obvious truth that life is unfair, but that it shouldn't be.
Right.
And I think that, like you're saying, part of life is running up to the things about society. Obviously, you need to get rid of injustice. That's important. But getting rid of things that are bothersome, I think, like, I don't think that's really the answer. Well,
what they're saying, what this this professor was saying, was that the I'm going to fuck this up. The backlash that you see on colleges is really a response to social injustices carried out in life that are, for instance, the judicial system for young black men.
Exactly.
Is if you do not agree with this, I can't see eye to eye with you on anything. But the judicial system is set up to fuck black men. It really is, in a sense that, like, and I witnessed it on my own. Now, I've since seen it on documentaries and heard people talk about it. But, like, I went to jury duty, and I sat. We had to sit in the hallway one day, and out of the 9 courts that were on that floor, all that came out were young black men. That's all that came out. And I watched moms cry because their son is going to jail for 10 years. You realize there's not a lot of scenarios that will happen in my life where I could get into the situation where I'd go to jail for 10 years.
This is exactly my problem with the backlash to PC culture, whatever that word means. It's like, yes, there are parts of it that are annoying, like sort of blowhardy, evergreen, statey, kind of absurd.
Yeah.
But the inconvenience or annoyance that you are feeling, even when someone's calling you a racist, which is a terrible thing to be called, it pales in comparison to being, you know, 1 out of 4 black men are going to go to prison in their life. It pales in comparison to being a person that doesn't know if they can be physically safe when they get pulled every time they get pulled over by a cop. Like, there's no real comparison. So while it's okay to feel sort of like, in my opinion, and it's okay to feel like annoyed by PC culture. Being annoyed it doesn't even come close to being unsafe.
I agree with that 100%. And I think I agree with that mostly as a father. I go, I can only imagine what my child, like, as having a child, and I go, I can't imagine having a young black child and worrying every time they take the car out. Hey, dad, can I take your car? And I go, yeah. And then I go, now I just set him up to get shot. Because it's a nice car.
It's just a reality that if you have a black kid, you have to have a conversation with them that you don't have to have with a white kid, where you have to say, when you're in the car with the cop, you have to have a conversation with every kid. This is when you're in do what the police tell you to do, right? That's a conversation every kid should have. The difference in the conversation when it's a black kid is, if you move quickly or don't do what the police tell you to do, they might shoot you.
Yeah,
and so you need to act accordingly.
But the argument is, and I'm curious to see how both of you respond to this. Is the argument is that I see on Facebook, because that's the other thing. If you go through my Facebook, you would not agree with one person I grew up with, because I grew up in the South. So it's a lot of really alt-right leaning, like Tommy Leherson. Was that her name? Tommy, the girl who got fired by.
Yeah.
I knew who she was right when she showed up, because all my friends think she's fucking brilliant. She's
the gal that was on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
Oh.
Yeah. Tommy Lehrer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
But their argument would be, when I was raised by my father, anything you say to a police officer is yes sir, no sir. That's it. That's all you're allowed to say. And you see some of these videos where it's almost like the second they get pulled over, the confrontations start. Man, can you roll down your window? Nah, it goes down this far. And you're like, I would never say that. I definitely would just roll my window down. For everyone listening, this is how you get pulled over by a police officer. pull out your registration, hands on top of your, this is how I
even just like me, if I was speeding, put my hands on top of the,
put your both hands on, if it's nighttime, turn on your interior light, both hands on top of your steering wheel, window down, and you wait for them. Both hands on top of your steering wheel so they can see both your hands.
100%. When you're going to reach for something,
what
you say,
some other tricks?
I'm going to reach, well, when you reach for something, you say, I'm going to reach for something. I'm going to reach for my wallet now. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I mean, I do that too.
Sir, I have a knife in the door of my car. It is a Spyderco knife. It is large. I'm just letting you know it's there, and you keep your hands up there.
But the difficulty is, and I agree, obviously.
That's just how I was raised. And I see that. I do see, like, I would never disagree. You can't disagree with a cop. You're never going
to
win it.
I have two things to say to that. One is looking at a video of a person. I mean, you've also seen lots and lots of videos of white people saying,
100%.
Oh, hell no. You know,
I don't think it has anything to do with color. I think it's more socioeconomic.
I think it does have to do with color, actually.
Really?
I think it straight up has to do with being, look, the reason that you might see an anecdote, which I would say is an anecdotal evidence, is like, I've seen these videos.
Yeah.
The link, not that you were making this link, but the link to, I've seen these videos where black people are like disrespectful when they get pulled over, ergo, you know, that's probably what's happening when they get shot. That's a spurious link that doesn't, yeah. We don't know what happened in the interaction where someone got shot that was unarmed, whether they said, fuck you, officer, or yes or no, sir. We don't know, right? But I would say that probably, and I'm this is just my sort of, I'm just jumping out into the dark here, that probably a black person is more predisposed to rolling his eyes and saying the window goes down this far to a cop because they've been pulled over 10,000 times every day, you know, all the time getting pulled over for driving while black. And so at a certain point, and not only that, they've been harassed and hurt by the cops. So
I can't believe oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this now, not realizing what I'm saying. So I just told you how to behave around the cops. I just said that out loud. That's how I behave every time. I am going to pick up my daughter from school, and I have my wife drop me off, and then me and her are going to walk home. And I'm sitting on the corner, and I see this really nice Mercedes, and it's slow rolling looking at me, and I realize, oh my God, it's my buddy Omar Dorsey. Omar plays Cookie in Ray Donovan. He was in Eastbound and Down. He's in Martin Luther King movie. He's fucking a big actor. He's now living in Atlanta, but I see him. I haven't seen him forever. He's been on the podcast twice. I was like, Omar! And Omar flips around, comes in, and grabs me, and we're sitting in a non-parking zone out front of my daughter's school. I jump in the car. I'm sitting in his car, and we're sitting there waiting for our daughters to get out of school. And I notice an undercover cop across the street staring at us. And I go, and then I see him looking at us, and I see him like almost behaving. So I go, I think that cop's staring at us. And then someone comes up, and he's like, gentlemen, I'm going to need you guys to move along. And I was like, oh, we're waiting for our daughters. And he's like, this is a no parking zone. Need to move along. We pull out, and the undercover cop flips a bitch and gets right behind us. And I went, are you fucking kidding me? And I go, this is because you're black, isn't it? I go, he saw a black guy in an expensive car pick up a white guy. How fucking dare he? And I started getting so indignant that, and Omar's like, yeah, this is called life, Bert. And he's like, I'm going to be dropping you off now, and I'm going somewhere else. Because he was like, you're going to get me fucking shot. So he dropped me off in front of the other pickup gate, and then the cop slow rolled me and stared at me like, oh, you must have just bought drugs. And
right.
So all that I just said goes out the fucking window, because when it did happen to me, I got fucking pissed.
You kind of makes you understand the Black Lives Matter, a day without white people, actually.
No, it still doesn't make me understand that.
By the way,
I would have been like, fuck yeah, I won't show up today. I will stay home all day long.
any excuse
right. Not to work.
Right, like, well, I would celebrate like 420 is if they would just make that Adolf Hitler day and I didn't have to go to work. I'd be like, well, my people wouldn't agree, but it's nice to be on the beach.
Wait, Bert, I have a call at 1:45. Should I switch it?
No. What time is it? No, okay. No, we will be done before 1:45. Okay, I'll get you guys
out
of here.
Sorry, you can
before.
Cut that out.
No.
I just didn't know because
I've done that so many times. I did that. I do that nonstop. I'll get you out right at one. When your call happens, the podcast is over, and we'll walk. And I'll walk you guys out.
Anyway, I feel like, yeah, there's bridges to be built. I don't know how we got so political, but anyway.
I love it, dude. Yeah. I love that. But that's the thing I love about comics is, like, I think the three of us are night and day, except for you guys are very similar because you're married. But, like, we're all very different, but I think at the core, we have many more similarities than we have differences.
I've been thinking about this so much since the election, actually, is like somehow comedy figured something out that the rest of the world needs to fucking get on board with. Because, like, you know, Nick DiPaolo and I don't have the same views politically.
Right.
And, like, but when I see – not the, I don't actually know Nick. I'm just using him as a paradigmatic example of a right-wing comedian. When I – or David Angelo. David Angelo is a writer on The Daily Show, a very funny comic, and we're friends. And politically couldn't be more different. But that we have this other thing, which is like, is he funny? Is she funny?
Yeah.
Right? It's like somehow we figured out like, oh, there are things that are more important than agreeing on every single factor that have created an ability for us to have a community, even though within that community there are people that think your political views are fucking garbage and my political views are bullshit. And somehow we still are able to like hang out and talk about shit. And that's what's – there's like a poison in political discourse right now, which is when you find out that someone disagrees with you is when you stop having the conversation. And that's actually when you should start the conversation.
I think I couldn't agree with that more. Stanhope used to always say, I'd much rather sit at a bar with any comedian, even like him and Dane had a problem. He's like, even Dane Cook, than someone that isn't a comedian.
Yeah.
Because there's something I think inherently that, like, I know, I even if we disagree to the bottom, I know ultimately we'll find something to agree on. Like, I think so.
Well, also, they're more stimulating.
Yeah.
That's true, too. In a way. I mean, there are a lot of stimulating people out there, but I like comedians the best.
What you probably didn't like about Bros is the bro go-to joke is to repeat whatever is popular in the movie of that summer.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I don't like their taste in music. I don't like how they dress.
Wait, what kind of music do you like?
I don't like sports.
What kind of music do you like?
You know.
She's like Sublime, Snoop Dogg,
hold on, you
Pantera.
When you first heard Sublime, did you like them?
To be honest with you, I don't even know who that is. I just know they're terrible.
They're good.
Oh, Sublime
is good. Yeah.
Sublime? Oh. I guarantee I will hate them.
Natasha!
You mentioned you like to listen to the Smiths and drink wine. I could do that.
Oh, yeah, but that's because I was...
You were just trying to impress me.
No, that's because I was picked on in high school, and I realized, fuck you. I refuse to listen to whatever the thing is that you guys like. All my friends introduced me to Susie and the Banshees, Sublime, or the Smiths, Morrissey.
What's that theme song from Shrek? That reminds me of what Bro's like. Hey now, you're a rock star.
By the way,
game on. He likes it.
Oh, yeah, Bert's definitely nodding his head.
All that glitters is gold.
What's that guy's
name? By the way, ran into him in a hotel. The lead singer
Is it Third Eye Blind?
No.
It's Mark McGrath. Who's
no,
that?
No,
that is
no.
That's the area though.
Hold on. I will tell you right now. I have purchased every Limp Bizkit album.
Limp Bizkit, by the way,
it's pronounced Limp Bizkit.
Let me just say that they are bad, but they're also good.
Their first album, $3 Bill Y'all, is a great album.
It's $2 Bill Y'all. Fun. They're fun to listen to. By the way, I like System of a Down a lot, but I don't know if
System of a Down does not.
They don't count, right?
They don't count. They're
on a different
fucking good.
They're so good. I like a lot of stuff. I like a lot of real man stuff. I'm a huge UFC fan, and I have been since I was a little kid. Like, I like a lot. Everybody, all these differences in culture are complete bullshit.
See, we both like hip hop, but I think both of us would agree. I got excited when I heard DJ Khaled got booed off stage.
Well, I didn't hear about this.
Oh, he got booed off stage at the Electronic Dance Musical Festival.
What'd
in
he
Vegas.
Do?
He did what he does, and that is, I'm a product. I got catchphrases. It's anything we've seen the baseline hack comic do, he does, and he doesn't have a body of work to stand behind it.
He didn't have an act.
He doesn't have an act. And so we watched him
He's
not
just
have an act.
Talking about his pussy.
Yeah. And all anyone did was go... throw his catchphrases back at him online, and they fit in so well. You were like, oh, you call this. We loved someone to say, I'm the best. I have no flaws. And then for you to fail and go, these are all your
That's
flaws.
That's our president.
How did he how's he dodging bullets left and fucking right?
Well, he's the ultimate dodger bullet because every bullet that is dodged at him is a lie, and everything – like fake news in his world means anything that isn't complimentary.
But fake news is a real fucking thing.
It's a different thing than what he describes it. You know, one thing that the Republicans have done masterfully well.
What?
Many things,
name
by the way.
Name things.
What's that?
Well, naming things.
Natasha has a theory about them naming things.
What's that?
No, just like alt-right and then calling us snowflakes. It's like alt-right sounds cool.
By the way, I have snowflake in my act right now, and it makes me cringe because of the laugh it gets.
Uh-huh.
My daughter's daughter's softball practice. They practice without a baseball. They practice without a softball. And the coach said, I don't want to introduce failure this early into the season. I just want to get them comfortable in their positions. And I was like, I think that's how you make snowflakes. Okay, it's staying in the act.
It's funny. That's funny.
But so what, the naming things, you think that's...
Well, I just think they're good at it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Branding. Oh,
yeah. They've branded themselves better. But the one thing that I think they've really done well, and this isn't just the alt-right, this is, I think, the right in general, Republicans in general, have done a very good job of taking the accusation and turning it into ammunition, right? So everything that they are accused of, they have found a way to grab it, flip it, and ride that
like
B-O-O-T-Y,
right?
Oh my. No,
sorry.
But
violence right now.
Violence is a perfect example. Everybody was going, oh my God, the Trump rallies, they're violent, they're pushing people.
Trump's going to make everyone violent.
Everyone violent. And then very quickly they grabbed that narrative and they flipped it and said, oh, there's left-wing violence. And there is, by the way.
And unfortunately, you know, one pops up and it gives them ammunition for 3 weeks on, what's that guy's name?
On Sean Hannity.
No, not Sean Hannity.
Oh, Tucker. Tucker Carlson.
Tucker Carlson. He just can't stop talking about how violent the
example
the left
of nut picking, right?
Tucker Carlson is so fun to watch.
I know.
Oh, he's awesome.
He's so good.
He can just railroad anyone.
Oh, and he says the most aggressive. I wish I had a little bit of Tucker Carlson in my personality where I could say the hurtful thing to you and then. But you didn't hear that. What's the thing? It's almost like I had a friend who was famous who used to do that to me. Say the hurtful thing and then tell you something, and you'd be like, how are we supposed to?
But that Tucker Carlson, what he does, and by the way, the left does it too, is the ultimate example of nut picking, right? So a guy goes to a baseball game and shoots a Republican.
Happens to be a Bernie Sanders.
And he's a left. No, not happens to. He did it out of left wing, fuel. He was a left wing, violent, insane person.
Yeah.
They'll grab that and go, here, look, it's evidence of the ongoing conspiracy of left-wing violence. The next day, right, something, the week earlier, somebody kills someone on the train because they're Muslim, or they drive a van into a group of Muslims in London. You ignore that because you're only picking the nuts you like. You're only picking the left does it too. They will pick that and go, look, terrorism, and they will ignore the terrorism that happens that doesn't fit their ideological narrative. So, I think maybe that's what comedians do well, is we strip away bullshit.
Is that
hypocrisy?
Sarah Tiana got into a fight with Bill Burr on a live podcast we did at the store called the End of the World Podcast. Not a fight, just an argument, and I definitely didn't back her up, which I still won't, Sarah. I respect you entirely, and I respect what she was saying. But I was like, I said to her, she goes,
what were they fighting about?
Trump just got elected, and she was explaining that all people that elected him were racist. And Bill was saying, no, they're not. That's not who elected him. There's some of just really hardworking people who are tired of what's gone on. And then she got into an argument, and I said to her after, I go, Sarah, you're arguing with one guy that his only job is to look at both sides of the argument and find the funniest of both sides, and then angle it. Take the side you don't want to hear the most, and angle it in the most brilliant, projected way. I would go, no one's fighting with him. That was a big misstep. I would have never disagreed with Bill.
But isn't that her job, too?
It's her job, too, but
we're talking about Bill Burr. That's what Bill does.
Right,
that's all
fair.
Bill
You're
does.
Right.
I mean, he's the only person who can make fun of trans, and you think it's funny. I mean,
dude, he did a bit
Moshe
about...
Moshe didn't think it was funny, but it made me laugh.
What? I never said that. Why are you throwing me under the
bus? I didn't mean that.
Why are you throwing me under the burr bus? What the hell's wrong with you?
I didn't mean to say that. I'm sorry.
He did a bit about being against the military that was... Have you heard it?
No.
It is fucking genius. It is genius. I'm purposefully wording it wrong so that you get to hear it out of Bill's word mouth the first time, his own way. But it was genius. And I went, I've thought that. I've definitely thought what he's thinking, the idea he has, I've thought it, but I never thought of the way he's thinking it.
Right.
Like, it's just, and I told Sarah that, I go, don't, but that's the thing about comics is that I always, like when that Evergreen thing happened, I go, I got to hear the student's opinion first.
Right.
Because I already know that opinion, I already agree with that opinion, but I guarantee you
You already agree with the that's bullshit opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's find the articulated version of why you think this is important.
Yeah, Black Lives Matter, I don't really have a view one way or the other with Black Lives Matters, but I definitely understood the All Lives Matters. I was like, all right, this because my dad always called me an idiot, but I was like, I'm probably wrong about that. Let me go see, like, that my dad, whenever I'd say to my dad, it was you're wrong, go to your room until you figure out why you're right.
And I mean, the argument with Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter is they say, if you don't read Black Lives Matter as Black Lives Matter 2, it's because you don't want to. Because it's so obvious. It's so, to any critical thinker looking at the Black Lives Matter movement and thinking what they're saying is Black Lives Matter and your life doesn't, is wanting that to be the narrative that's true. Like, the reality of Black Lives Matter is that the reason that that organization exists is because they think it has to, is because they think that there's a societal reality yeah. that is telling them and is evidenced by police violence that Black Lives Matter, that Black Lives don't matter as yeah. much as white lives do.
And if you argue the point where you go, well, they're protesting cops and they want to kill cops. No, you're just taking the lowest base of that idea.
It's not
and saying I'll agree with them
exactly
in the opposite.
That's exactly right.
I'm not. Yeah.
And I don't think I think that You know, there's Blue Lives Matter, right? Which is the police saying police lives matter. And the evidence that police lives already matter greatly is that the worst crime that one can commit in our society is to kill a police officer. Yep. That will get you the chair. That will immediately get you convicted. There is no worse crime in society.
I didn't know that.
It's true, right? A cop killer, that's the worst thing. Literally the worst kind of murder is the worst thing you can do, and the worst kind of murder is cop killing, right? Yep. And so blue lives already do matter and did matter mm-hmm. and should matter, right?
Yeah.
The cops are important.
Someone was talking about I had a joke about not wanting to hit my wife, but not only because I've hit people and I've missed, and mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want to miss hitting my wife. Like,
okay,
it's just
sure.
enough out of you. Oh shit! And the only reason I say that is because I like this line. I go, you got to Ray Rice my chick. If like you better not shoot, sure. purposely pack and leave. And then someone's like, you should never hit a woman in the audience. And I was like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I go, how about this? Like, and this is my feelings. Shit, how about nobody hits nobody? Like, I don't like getting hit either.
Uh-huh.
Like, I've been beaten up, and it really sucks. I agree with anyone. I would never hit a woman, but I also won't hit a man. So I was like, let's just stop hitting. Anyone who wants to hit people to solve solutions, let's get rid of them. Like, let's fucking make it so severe.
What about your kids? Can you hit them?
I will not hit my kids. That's me.
Won't even spank them on the butt?
I won't spank them.
Why?
Because I got spanked. I didn't like it.
And you just didn't like it, or do you think it fucked you up?
It humiliated me. And I was like, I don't like this relationship with me and my dad now that I'm humiliated.
Oh. And then you got spanked years later by Paul F. Tompkins at the Improv.
Fucking.
He put you over his neatly tailored knee.
Dear Paul F. Tompkins, if you want to come on this podcast, there's an open invite. The caveat is I'd like to have drinks with you again, and that you have to like me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's quite a caveat.
The caveat is you have to
like
me.
You're the
Paul
most likable guy.
People always go, yeah.
All right, let me ask you this. Paul's going to do the podcast. What do you wear? Do you put some shoes on?
He put the three-piece suit on. Hello, Paul. Welcome to my my soiree, my library. He puts books up all over the place. Yeah. You're like taking down antlers and shit.
But I'm pulling out books that I think you were like, oh, Kafka. I haven't read this in a while.
Yeah, he picks up. Oh, what did you think of The Metamorphosis? What did you think? Oh, man. Yeah, that guy changed, huh?
By the way, I couldn't name one Kafka book, and I'm guessing Metamorphosis is a book. Look at this.
It is. Okay. I think. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's about a guy that wakes up as a praying mantis.
Yeah. Oh, for real?
Yeah. Right?
No wonder I never read him.
Yeah.
So I read The Firm instead. Crichton. No. Grissom. Grissom.
Grissom, right.
I read all his shit.
Hey, Michael Crichton's one of the best storytellers that's ever lived.
Yeah, I would definitely not wear shoes.
You wouldn't put shoes on for him?
No. I'm not putting shoes on for you guys, and I like you guys a lot.
But you're not trying to impress us.
I'm not trying to impress him.
You're not trying to impress anybody.
I'm done in trying to impress anybody. I'm in this
business.
That's
a good place to be.
It is such a great way to feel, like, to go, like, I don't need this. I know, like, I can tour and do fine. I can do my podcast and get paid. I can do television if I want. I can do hosted reality for as long as I want. But I'm cool. I'm cool just like this. This, for me and what I like doing, and that's just stand-up, really, this conversation is more valuable than anything. I feel like it really allows someone like myself to have somewhat of a small renaissance of ideas in their head.
I agree.
You don't agree?
No, I totally agree.
That'd be funny.
I don't agree with your renaissance in your head idea. Yeah. I think that's a bad move.
Well, aren't we lucky we have each other?
Yeah, I just feel like... In there's a position I have literally zero respect for, is the position that says, because you disagree with me, you're an idiot.
It's like, right. that's such a fucking insane thing to think. Like, that there's nobody who's on an ideologically different island than you who's intelligent is so fucking stupid. Oh, you're an idiot if you think that.
I said one time, if you're offended by anything I said tonight, come up and tell me why so I know why and I can change my opinions or at least agree with you or disagree with you. That's what I'd like out of life. I want the opportunity to grow. I'm 44 and I feel like I'm just now getting the smartest I've ever been, you know? And so I'm like, which I guess would make sense.
Well, what's happening now that's sad is the alt-right. People don't even care what the information is. It's just entertainment. You know, like that guy on your show who was like just spouting things. He had no idea. He was like saying the women's march, like how did the women take off work? And you were like, it was on a Saturday. But right. it's still just like entertainment for him to just be having these views.
Yeah. But again, I think you're right. But I also think that the left does the same thing.
Of course.
I guess someone said seriously, and Siri just popped up. Sorry.
I think that, you know, what has happened is as we've gotten further and further, like, ideologically, like, built into our sort of fortresses, that the only thing that matters is you've got a reality that you will try to superimpose no matter what. It's not about exploring ideas. It's about trying to enforce your ideas. And I think that's what's happening all over the political spectrum. And I keep saying, like, I think it's important for people to talk, but to be honest with you, I'm pretty pessimistic. I think we're past the point of talking, and I think the world's pretty split and won't ever get fused back together. I think this country, the ideological splits in this country are so deep that there's no hope. The only hope is to find people you love and find people you like talking to that aren't insane and just talk to them and be with them.
Or even if they are insane a little bit.
Well, that's comedians. Find people you love and be with them.
So let's get to the business before I kick you guys out and you go to your call. Another period. Are you still doing them?
Yes, we're on season 3. It airs, I think, early 2018, so February.
It's one of the most impressive things.
Thank you. We have
business.
A lot of people from the state on the show. Liam Black, David Wayne, Tom Lennon, as well as
Mike Liam Black.
Moshe
next time
Kasher
you,
is on
next
it.
Time you see Mike Liam Black, just be like, be dead serious. Don't let the joke go. Go, are you really best friends with Bert? I always tell him if I ever run into anyone from the state, I always go, I'm going to tell them how close we are. And he's like, we're not that close. And I go, yeah, we're really close.
He's so talented. I love
that guy.
Have you seen our show? You have to watch him on it. He's amazing.
He plays
our butler Peepers.
I have seen that show. I actually have seen that show.
Another period, takes place in 1902.
The problem I have with Comedy Central right now is that I want to be able to see it quicker. It was a week. Your show was a weekend before I fucking was on a plane listening to you, I think on Rogan maybe. And I was like, motherfucker, I've been missing a week of this. And so now you're on, and I'm going to put another period on my DVR.
Okay,
so it comes on.
The point of the show, by the way, was to have conversations like this. Uncomfortable, uneasy conversations.
So good.
Moshe's show, Problematic. I think you could still buy it on iTunes.
Yeah, it's out there. It's also on the Comedy Central app. And we're done with season one. And we started with cultural appropriation, something that nobody likes talking about, and ended with the alt-right. Something that nobody likes talking about. I don't know who our demo is.
But you're so good at seeing both sides. I learned so much from coming to all the tapings.
Yeah,
it's
thanks.
Like very enlightening.
You're so quick, man.
Thanks,
like,
dude.
You're so quick. I watched, I forget the one with Hannibal.
The Dark Web.
Yeah. Dude, by the way, I needed more explanation on the Dark Web because I even looked for it. I was like, I don't think I need to fucking.
The reason you didn't learn from that episode how to get on the Dark Web is because it's Comedy Central. Forget it. I mean, the network people, they're not going to be able to figure out what the network is. Anyway, specifically, we're like, don't inform people of the path to getting on the dark web.
That's all I wanted.
Even though, by
That's
the way,
all I fucking
oh, they
dark,
took that out.
But, well, it was that was their one of their main notes was don't teach people how to get on the dark web. By the way, the dark web is legal.
They can figure
to be
it
on,
out from watching your episode.
And no, they can't quite. I'll tell you,
a bro, you have a hard time.
I'll tell you now. You go because I don't think that the dark web is morally ambiguous. I think the dark web is morally ambiguous. It's not bad. A lot of people think the dark web. They think child pornography, which is obviously a horrible, disgusting thing. But it's just like the regular internet. You can find horrible, disgusting, awful things on the regular internet that should be outlawed, and you can find, you know, amazing things on the internet. So There's a lot of amazing things on the dark web. There's a lot of terrible things on the dark web. You are an adult. You can make your own decision. What you do is you go to – you Google Tor browser. Download T-O-R browser.
T-O-R
a totally legal thing.
Browser.
It's completely legal to be on Tor. In fact, the government invented it. The U.S. Navy invented the Tor browser, and there's a reason they haven't shut it down. It's because they need it. It's because people who are in regimes like North Korea and China where they don't have – an Iran, they don't have unfettered access to the internet, are able to get online and actually communicate with the real rest of the real world by using the Tor browser. So you go to Tor, T-O-R, browser, download.
Also,
and
tell about our tour, too.
Right. But more importantly than the Tor browser is Natasha and I are going on tour together. We're doing the Endless Honeymoon tour.
When I was doing research for another period, I learned about this couple who went on a 10-year honeymoon because they were so rich and they came back with four kids. So we're trying to do something like that.
Right,
so we are still continuing our honeymoon. And
we're starting in New Orleans July 19th, and then we go to
Atlanta. I think 10 different cities.
Atlanta,
Milwaukee, Philadelphia,
Atlanta, Miami.
Chicago, Miami.
New York, Boston, Montreal.
Are you guys flying to each? Are you
check
driving?
Our website.
We're going to fly to each, I think. Yeah. I wanted to take my RV. See, I'm a bro, too. I wanted to take my RV, too. But the drive from here to New Orleans would have been a bitch.
Oh, that's a beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been really
rough. Too much. But, yeah, we're coming to a city near you.
I'll promote this tour coming up. Are the dates online?
They're all online. July 19th,
websites.
We start. And then we just go until basically August 6th, where
and
we end in Chicago.
And please buy the tickets in advance, because things will sell out.
Yeah. And it helps us, too. When you get ticket counts to go, I have breathing room. Orlando's half sold. So I'll talk about this before. People have heard this the second time. I definitely will talk about it.
By the way, our show has nothing to do with the alt-right or ideological castles in the sky. It's pretty much just a bunch of dick and pussy jokes and live relationship counseling.
This is going to be a great episode. When does it start? July 9th?
July 19th.
July 19th. Awesome. Well, I'm going to throw this up today, I think. This is a fucking great podcast.
Thank you so much
You're
for having
best,
us.
Bro.
No, I'm being dead serious. Anytime you want a podcast ever, fucking this, feel free. Just call me. I'll have you anytime. I'll have you day
All
on.
Right.
Yeah, let's do it.
That's
I want
very
to smoke
nice
a cigar.
Of you.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
All right, bye.
This episode was brought to you by The Machine.